evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, October 1st, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449-389-pound. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is going to be back in the Gospel of John. We're in chapter 6, and I'm trying to remember where we left off last week. There's quite a bit to read here. I really don't want to break it up. I think last week we read where Jesus sent the disciples over to Capernaum, to cross the sea over to Capernaum, and he walked across the water. And they saw him. He came into the ship, and immediately they went on the other side. We'll pick up there in verse 22. And the following day, when the people which stood on the other side of the sea saw that there was none other boat there save that one whereinto his disciples were entered, and that Jesus went not with his disciples into the boat, but that his disciples were gone away alone. Howbeit there came other boats from Tiberias, nigh unto the place where they did eat bread, after that the Lord had given thanks. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they also took shipping and came to Capernaum, seeking for Jesus. And when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when comest thou hither? And Jesus answered them and said, Truly, truly, I say unto you, ye seek me not because ye saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him that hath God the Father sealed. Then said they unto him, What shall we do that we might work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, This is the work of God, that ye believe on him whom God hath sent. They said therefore unto him, What sign showest thou then that we may see and believe thee? What doest thou work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said unto them, Truly, truly, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore, give us this bread. And Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh unto me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you, that ye also have seen me, and believe not. All that the Father giveth me shall come unto me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I come down from heaven, not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he had given me I should lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day. And this is the will of him that sent me, that every one which seeth the Son and believeth on him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up on the last day. The Jews then murmured at him, because he said, I am the bread which cometh down from heaven. And they said, Is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it then that he saith, I come down from heaven? Jesus therefore answered and said unto them, Murmur not among yourselves. No man can come unto me except the Father which hath sent me draw him, and I will raise him up at the last day. It is written in the prophets, And they shall be all taught of God. Every man therefore that hath heard and hath learned of the Father cometh unto me. Not that any man had seen the Father, save he which is of God, he had seen the Father. Truly, truly, I say unto you, he that believeth on me hath everlasting life. I am the bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness, and are dead. This is the bread which cometh down from heaven, that man may eat thereof, and not die. I am the living bread which come down from heaven. If any man eat of the bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give him is my flesh, which I will give for life unto the world. Okay, I'm going to stop there, and we'll pick up next week in verse 52. Okay, let's see. Okay, a couple of things I just want to talk about tonight. You know, we do need more help, and we met a couple of the leadership of the National Liberty Alliance came together this past week, or last week, shall I say, and discussed some issues and some thoughts and ideas. And one of the things we're going to try to do is not get too involved in court cases. I mean, we may give a little bit of ideas and thoughts on some things, but we don't want to get lost into discussions on people, other people's court cases particularly. What people need to do, though, is maybe read the court cases that we have filed and maybe ask questions about that, because that's part of the process of we the people taking back control and consent of our government. Remember, we have government by consent, and up until this present time, people don't know how to consent to government, nor has government taught people how to consent. And we consent to government in two ways, and we've spoken about this, and I think we need to speak about this more often. Two ways we can consent to government particularly. Of course, the main way we consent to government is by the Constitution. We the people ordained and established that Constitution for them. And they're not to go outside that criteria, that which we have laid forth, and give them jurisdictions in certain areas, limited jurisdiction, and they're limited sovereign. And so, of course, obedience to the Constitution is one way that we have government by consent. But to maintain that obedience to the Constitution, we must take control of the judicial and the political process, both of which has been robbed a long time ago. And we, the people, have no control over the court system, which we should. The justice system is really broken up into really two things, is there is law and there is equity. And we're going to be discussing a lot of this in the future, hopefully, but also our court case is going to be covering the differences between those two things. But law encompasses more than nature's law, okay? There is a division between law. There's what's called positive law, and there's natural law. Natural law is the law that we, the people, you know, expect that we're going to get when we enter into the courts, unless we choose an equity court, which we could do that, and if we had just judges, we would do that, because things could move a lot quicker than going through a jury. But since we, at this point in time, we do not have judges that we can trust, we do need to constantly focus in on courts that has juries where the jury decides, we the people. But all courts, they're called courts of record, by the way. All these courts of record of law concerning natural law, is justice courts and is to be controlled by we the people. If someone was to offend someone in some way, it was a crime somehow, and it would be the people through a grand jury that decides whether someone might need to go to court concerning a crime of some kind or an injury that they put onto someone. And they may, of course, try to deal with that problem, if possible, before even sending them into court. That's a possibility, and people don't know that. Juries don't know that. The government doesn't seem to even know that, and they're not interested in that because they really want to control things through statutes. But anyway, we need to take back the control of the courts by controlling the juries, and we're doing that by creating administrations across this nation for individuals for every county. And those four individuals would be the people who would be administrators for both the grand jury and a petit jury, which is the trial jury. They would they would make sure that these people are orientated, making sure that they understand what their duty is, what their vow is, and what really their purpose is. And in common law, there are two basic principles that rule the court ultimately, and that is for every injury, there must be a remedy, okay? And that's number one. The other thing, in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured body, and the government cannot be that injured party. Now, that doesn't mean if someone was to maybe somehow steal money from the government that they wouldn't be tried, because they'd be stealing from the people ultimately. But the point is we see all too many times where people are in court because they violated some kind of a statute, which we're going to get into great detail in our court case that we're putting together now as we speak. I've had a lot of time to be able to put towards this case this past week, and we've got the structure of the case laid out, I think. We're working now trying to put it all together, but we do have the structure. I'll call it a table of contents. And what I'd like to do, anybody interested, I don't know if Jeff is here from upstate New York. I know he was looking for something to do with us, and this might be something that he might be interested because he gets involved in a lot of cases himself. But we're looking for people who might want to get together maybe sometime this week and brainstorm through this table of contents that we put together. And maybe they can find some things that we've left out that we need to add into this case as we continue to write this case. I'd like to be able to say we'll be done in a week, but I really can't say that. This is a pretty big case. A lot of thought is going into it. We want to make it very clear, and we want to make our point. And so, don't know how long it's going to take to put together, but I don't think it's going to be that much longer. If I can get a good solid weekend this week, I think we'd be very close. I have a cough. I caught the last couple of days, so I'm just getting over it. One of the ways we control or have government by consent is through the juries. And now the administrations that we're establishing across this nation, we're looking to put four administrators in every single county. There's about 3,100 counties across the United States. So we're looking at about, 12,000 to 15,000 people who we're going to need. And these would be full-time jobs, and we would take this away from the politically controlled individuals who are, take control over the orientation of the juries, or maybe control of, for instance, a prosecutor might call the grand jury together in order to bring a case. And they constantly abuse these grand juries, and they also constantly abuse the trial juries. And they stack the cases, they stack the juries, so the cases really are all totally controlled. You have a judge that is working for the government. You have that's up against an individual and accusing them of something. You have a prosecutor who also works for the government and is prosecuting the individual for something. And it may be for a statute, and there may be no crime. Government may just not like them doing the things that they're doing, whatever that may be. And then on top of that, you got a politically controlled grand jury. After all, every prosecutor can easily get his ham sandwich. Indicted. I mean, we've heard that 1,000 times. I'm sure we all heard that. That's a pretty disgusting statement to begin with. It's pretty sad, and we shouldn't even laugh at it. We should be crying about that. The other thing is the total control, again, inside the courtroom by the judge over the trial jury. Even to over decide a trial jury, to call maybe a case, what do they call it, when they kind of get locked. And they throw the case out, and they put the person back into double jeopardy. Now they've got to go through another trial again. That's not to be done. We do cover this in our court case. All these issues we're going to cover in our court case. But in any event, you don't have a really good chance if the government's coming out to get you for whatever reason, and usually that is the case. Most crimes that we see, they're not crimes at all. And as a matter of fact, it was Judge Bork who said that 80% of the people that fill our jails are people that are there only because they opened their mouth. They participated. And that's the key. That was a lot easier, I think, back 40 years ago to not participate, and even 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was probably a lot easier. Today, it's a lot more difficult because they've really sort of doubled down on preventing people, you know, from escaping their clutches, so to speak, because they're so bold, they really feel that they're not going to get caught in all of the evil that they are doing in these courts. And believe me, there's a lot of really wrongdoing going on in these courts. So anyway, we need to take control of that. We need to prevent any prosecutor from abusing a grand jury. We need to really make the grand juries understand that this is all totally your decision. You listen to the story, listen to what they have to say. If you want to speak to other people, you can call people before you and ask them questions, whatever you want to do, and make a decision. And by the way, grand jury, you even have the opportunity. First of all, if there's no crime here, you know, definitely shouldn't send it into the court. Where's the injured party? You know, see, this is consent of government. This is the people involved in the judicial process, which is the most important process we need to be involved in, because this is the place where any of us could be picked up off the streets and thrown in jail and not be able to exercise our unalienable rights, due process or whatever it is. And so we need to take control of this and prevent these things from happening. The other thing is often when there's a wrongdoing, when something has happened, if the grand jury can talk with the person, the injured body, and then talk maybe with the person who's being accused, and they may be able to work out a situation where restitution could be, because that, after all, isn't that what natural law is all about? Restitution? Isn't it about, you know, if a man steals a man's ox, as the Bible says, you got to pay him back three or four, or whatever it is that the Bible says. I mean, that's principles that God has given us to give us an idea on how we might be able to restore people. And so, you know, maybe you can work out an arrangement that the person that has been injured is happy with, and the person that did the injury is willing to say, okay, yeah, and sign the papers, and as if a court case went through, and pay restitution, whatever that takes to get that restitution taken care of. So those principles are there, and they're never exercised, but they should. It would prevent a lot of cases from going in, a lot of wasted time and money, solve a lot of problems, and move along, move things on, and be able to open the courts to really work the cases that they really, you know, have to work. The other thing is on the other side of this thing, you know, the power and the authority of the trial jury, of jury nullification. You know, judges will not tell the juries that they have nullification powers. And as a matter of fact, if you tried to let the jury know, the judge would get down on you real hard. He would not permit that in his court. Yet that should be part of the orientation of the juries, the knowledge of jury nullification, to be able to say, wait a second, you know, that's a statute that doesn't apply here. We're not going to apply here. That is, you know, it's not a righteous or a just statute, or it doesn't work with this case, or You know, and there's always a case where maybe, for instance, you know, somebody does something wrong for whatever reason, and you might say to yourself, you know, if I was stuck in that person's position, I might have done the same thing. Maybe they stole something to feed their family. I don't know. But, you know, we have to look at everything, and the jury needs to decide. They need not only to decide whether they're innocent or guilty, but they also have to decide, well, how do they, and a lot of people don't know this. And again, we're going to discuss Nisi. So it's a very important court case that everyone should really read and be able to learn about to understand how the system works, what the law is, and come to a realization of what liberty is and what the power and the authority of we the people are. We have to remove this power and authority from the judges and prosecutors who are totally corrupt. I know of a case, I'm working on a paper for someone right now, where they're trying to get in to talk to the jury. And the prosecutor, you know, the district attorney's office said, whoa, you know, that's against the law. You're even asking to go see a jury. Well, what's he talking about? Against the law. It's illegal, he said, to try to go see a grand jury. Grand jury should be open to anyone. Anyone should be able to walk in the courthouse and say, hey, when's the grand jury meeting next? I'd like to get on a list. I got something I'd like to talk to him about. And they should have opportunity to go in and communicate and talk to the jury. And, of course, the administrators can work a lot of these things out beforehand and maybe even solve the problem where they don't even need to go. You know, often people are abused by government officials and offices and trying to get some things done or get some information from a government official or whatever the case may be, and they're just not giving it to them. You know, a visit down to the administrators, a few phone calls, and they would get what they ought to get. And if they don't, then we could launch an investigation. Go over, talk to these people in the office, find out what's going on, and why are they not giving the people the things that they deserve, that they're asking for, and so on. This is government by consent. If we cannot, if we the people cannot control the judicial process as the part of the law and the courts that deal with the people, and again, that's the natural law side of the court. You know, there are 54 different U.S. Code titles, 54. Each one of them is a body of law unto themselves. Some of them are nisi prius, okay, which means unless they reject, they're in it. They got to participate. Often these nisi prius courts are courts, administrative courts, concerning people working for the government. You know, once they kind of sign in, they have certain authorities and liberties I don't want to say liberties, but authority or certain insights on what's going on, and they have to be careful with that authority, and they can't abuse that authority. So policies and procedures are written for them. For instance, Congress writes these things. You'll find them in U.S. codes. And these are courts, these are bodies of law, and we'll call them law for right now, they're statutes or codes, they are what's called, can't think of the word, I'll figure it out in a minute, I'll bring it up, but anyway, it's different from something that is what's called positive law. Enacted, that's the word I was looking for. So we have laws or codes that were written by Congress, but never enacted. And I've been questioning, why have they never been enacted? As a matter of fact, of the 54 different titles, only 27 of the titles have been enacted. Well, what's going on here? What's the purpose of the others? The other, you know, 54 minus 27, what's the purpose of that? And as I'm looking through these things, and it dawns on me, well, people are participating in certain things, and once they participated in these certain things, they are now kind of signing up for the administrative process. If something goes wrong, policies and procedures must be followed, and certain criterias or punishments must be affected. And so there's a trade-in. If they don't want to be involved in that, then they don't get involved in that kind of business with the government. There's certain commercial activities. There's law for that. Enacted law. Law, it's called positive law. Very interested they use the word positive law. To me, I think that's a game. But positive law really means human law. That's what it means. Law created by humans. And we have given the authority of humans, the legislatures, to write law on behalf of, you know, on behalf of the people in certain issues or situations. For instance, let's take the federal codes, okay? The authority and power that we gave Congress to write law is found in Article 1, Section 8. We've given them 18 powers, and one of those 18 powers is the power to write laws on the other 17 powers. And so, you know, that is a job we gave them, and that is law. People can, you know, face a penalty of jail time in those courts because it's written up in the statutes. And usually it's when they abuse their power. In other words, coming out on somebody and acting under the color of law, like the IRS does all the time, coming out and acting under the color of law, claiming a badge and a uniform and power and authority, taking your money, sealing your bank accounts, doing whatever they please. And they don't have the power and the authority to do that, certainly not to the people. That's under USC 26, which we will cover in great detail in our court case, along with USC 18, which is where the penal code is found. You know, the federal government has no power, no authority. We gave them nothing anyway. You can't find it in the Constitution, okay? And you'll find these powers generally in Section 8. you'll find some restrictions very specific in Section 9 of the Constitution, Article 1, that this is the power and the authority we gave to the legislators. And we did not give them power or authority to write federal penal codes. We did not give it to them. And they know we didn't give it to them. And if you look into USC 18, Title 18, you will discover that's maritime. And yet, nobody seems to know it. Judge doesn't look at it, doesn't say nothing about it. People go to jail here on the land on maritime law. Prosecutors prosecute with it. Defending attorneys pay no heed to it. I don't know whether I don't know how that is. I guess they really don't study or look into the law to see what's going on. They exercise whatever it is that they were taught, and I guess they don't go any further, you know? I myself personally am not happy with that kind of thing. I like to do research, dig deep, find out the reasons, you know, look into things, especially in the sense of law. Do they have the authority and the power? Where did we give them authority and power? Well, anyway, we did do some work on the titles, and we're putting together a memorandum on that, which will be included in this case also. We're going to cover all of these problems and all of these situations. You know, we went through the Constitution to discover where the violations are, and under the responsibility particularly of the judiciary. Why the judiciary? Because they're the ones that's supposed to be the courts of justice. They're the ones that's supposed to really exercise what is not repugnant to the Constitution, lawful statutes, lawful law. A lawful statute is a law. Why? Because we, the people, vested legislators to create law for certain purposes, to control certain businesses, whatever they may be, commercial things, things going on between states. You know, all this has to, it's like policies and procedures for a big corporation. So we have to give them the authority to make up the rules and penalties and different things, you know. Should be, people abuse penalties is always where the areas where the people abuse their powers, okay? Now, it's debatable on whether those particular codes should be really draw the people into a court of justice at that point. Because I do know, courts of law, they have the power and the authority to do things and to fine and incarcerate. If it's an administrative court, they do not have the power to fine and incarcerate. And like I said, only 27 of the 54 U.S. codes have been enacted and are called positive law. Okay? Natural law is the law of the heart. It's written in the hearts of all men. We're going to cover that in great detail also in our court case. So anyway, the court case we're putting together in itself is an education. And if people expect to be ignorant and free, as Thomas Jefferson said, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Okay? They expect what never was and never will be. You cannot have liberties if you don't have the knowledge of liberty and understand where liberty comes from, what power and authority you have liberty by. And what is a constitution? Our founding fathers done a great job putting together the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. A fantastic job. I can see one or two things that I might have changed, and I think they made it. One big error that they made is they fell when they were debating among the states concerning slavery, and there was a couple of states that refused that was to continue, and they put a few things into the Constitution about it. You know, one is called a two-thirds man. And that was supposed to be really to help destroy slavery, actually. But in any event, I've heard the argument. I don't know that I'm convinced of that, but it might be true. I think that's the big sin of our founding fathers. They should have said, okay, we'll do it with 11 colonies instead of the 13, we can't compromise our principles. I think that's what our founding fathers should have done. And I'll bet you that 13 colonies would eventually have joined anyway. But this was a problem. And we can't compromise our integrity. We need to apply the law as it is written. And if it's not good law, then we need to change the law. It's that simple. The Constitution is good law, really good law. U.S. codes, all of this stuff that I've been looking at, looks like it's pretty good law, with the exception of USC 26 and USC 18. That's fraud. And we're going to, you know, again, I'm not going to discuss that tonight, but it is going to be discussed in great detail in our court case. So anyway, the key thing is consent. And that's what we, the people, need to do. We need to be given consent of government. And again, we do that on the judicial side of things by controlling the courts of justice. We have no control on the courts where judges come in and sit in and hear things under U.S. codes. There's many, many different courts out there. And we're going to list some of the most important courts that we know. But there's a maritime court. There's a jurisdiction called maritime. It's not really different courts. It's really the law that's being exercised in a particular court, because all these things are done within the federal jurisdictions, the U.S. district courts. The question is what jurisdiction is at play at this particular court at the time when the court opens, okay? And if it's under a particular U.S. code, then that's what's going to govern that that court. But when it comes to the people, if you're going to accuse the people, it's always a court of justice. Under natural law, we accept nothing other. And the people must control it. The judge has absolutely zero to say. And when a jury goes in, and comes out and says, hey, we're locked. We can't come to a decision. Well, that's a terrible thing. We can go back into the room and you're going to stay there until you come up with a decision, because that is their duty. That's the oath they took, the vow they took. And if they really are a locked jury and they really cannot work it out, then they have to come to the certain point where they have to realize, well, okay, then we're going to have to acquit the guy or gal. We're going to have to acquit. And they'll have to come out and we're acquitting. And that's that. That's the law. All or none. And there is no such thing as a judge overruling a jury's decision, okay? Or calling a jury, again, I forget the word, but we'll call it locked, a locked jury, and say, well, okay, we'll it's a mistrial. We'll do another trial. No, that's double jeopardy in the Constitution. That's not lawful. You can't do that, Mr. Judge, number one. Number two, Mr. Judge, you don't have that power. We didn't give you that authority. You're outside of your authority or your jurisdiction. Hung jury. Thank you, Terry. Hung jury is the word I was looking for. So, you see, this is important stuff. We need to learn this stuff. We need to know this stuff. It is not complex or difficult. Yeah, if you want to go learn about the 54 U.S. codes, you know, all of these different titles. There's 54 U.S. U.S. code. Try to go learn all that. That could become very complex. Some of these titles are thousands of pages long. And therein is the purpose of a lawyer that should go before the bar, but not the bar the way they have it. But the bar is a level. You know, it really, it's, you know, you have to meet the bar, be brought before the bar. And that really identifies with the court, okay? And so if people want to, you know, have a specialty in a particular kind of law, then there you go. You need to go to school for that. And you could learn outside of going to some kind of, you know, schooling on that, but you still have to take some kind of a test if you're going to. Because I think in those areas, well, I don't want to say you need a license, because that would be incorrect. There's no such thing as a real license on that anyway. But in any event, the law that we're interested in is natural law. That's what we're interested in. It's called common law, that which is common unto all men. And if you ask a lawyer, most lawyers will tell you that common law is Roman law, it's statutory, or it is a collection of the ruling of different cases. That's not common law. You know, juries do not contemplate other cases to make a decision on how they're going to rule in a court case. They're there for the facts, just the facts. I want to hear the story. I want to hear what he said, she said, they said, we said. And then you come together as 12 individuals in a room and you really start to chew on these things. And if someone brings up, you know, they said this, that, and the other thing, but, you know, I noticed this or the other thing. And I think, yeah, you're right. You see, 12 people will get to the truth, okay? And if 12 people working diligently, untainted, can't get to the truth, then they didn't do a good enough job. And if some are leaning towards innocent and some are leaning towards guilt and they just can't get to it, then they're just going to have to say and acquit. We're going to go and acquit. That's what they have to do. But they need to remain in that room until they finish their job. Otherwise, we have to put a person through double jeopardy, and the Constitution says no. And that is an unalienable right. We have a right of not having to be brought before the court over and over and over and over again by the government. And we don't need the government controlling any of this stuff. All we need is a magistrate who could be a judge. All judges are magistrates. We just need a magistrate, sort of a traffic cop, keeping things moving. That's all. They don't stick their nose in there. There are no summary decisions, proceedings or anything where they make a summary decision. It's not permitted in a court of record. This is all for the jury to decide. Okay, so that's one side of things. How else do we consent to our government? We consent to our government also in the political realms, which have been stolen from us also, the committeemen. You know, we've spoken about the committees of safety and how our founding fathers all belonged to committees of safety. That was the vehicle by which the United States came to be. The war was fought. Decisions were made. It was all by the committees of safety. And in 1789, when the Constitution was finally signed and empowered, okay, by the people, then at that point in time, the committees of safety morphed into what we know today as the committeemen. And the committeemen have been taken over, centralized to control on each state and ultimately on the federal level. It's a top-down structure. And anybody that's been involved in the committeeman thing, it doesn't take long. They have a high attrition rate because people get involved a year or two or three, and they get so disgusted and they leave, and they get new people, and they just keep turning them around. Okay, well, we shouldn't be disgusted. If we're disgusted, there's a problem there. Yeah, the problem is that they don't get to really decide anything. People up top make the decision. Everything is fixed. The whole thing is rigged. And we have a plan to take this back and give it back to the people. We're the grassroots, the people in the local communities get to make the decisions for whatever affects their community. Whether they're looking at an assembly district or a congressional district or a senatorial district, whatever it is, okay, whatever affects that particular, voting area. People get to vote for local things within towns or villages, wherever they live. If you live in a village, you get to vote not only the village things, but also in the town things. You know, there's also state levels, county levels, assembly district levels. Then, of course, there's the federal level, but really on the federal level, the only people we really get to that we should be constitutionally be electing ultimately on the federal level is our congressmen. Senators shouldn't be chosen by us. Again, something we're going to discuss in our court case. The president is not elected by popular vote either, and that was planned that way. It was important to be done that way. Otherwise, maybe a few states with high population, big cities, can control the whole thing. And that's why we have the Electoral College. Okay, so we get to have consent of our government by controlling political power. If we truly have political authority and power on the grassroots level through the committeeman process that our founding fathers set up from day one, actually it took effect years before through the committees of safety, and they control government after that through the committeeman process. And if we don't like an individual, they're not doing the right thing, and we're not happy with them, we can recall them. Committeemen can come together and discuss the problem, say, let's go out and get the signatures, and let's recall this person, run another election. Let's get rid of them. Committeemen, even though they don't exercise that power, okay, they do exercise, and it's a crooked system, they exercise the power of really helping these people become elected. And as long as you're kissing the rear end of the committee men, so to speak, okay, in this case, corrupt committee men, not necessarily the individuals on the grassroots level that are corrupt, but sprinkled among them are the people making money, getting business, all kinds of deals are made. You know, there's money to be made here. And by controlling political things. But anyway, a person getting elected, if they were to get a call from the county chair or even just a couple of committee men on a town chair, okay, and they got a call from that person to say, hey, we want to talk to you because we had a problem with you. And we'll see you Tuesday at 3 o'clock. They're going to be there Tuesday at 3 o'clock. They're not going to say, well, my calendar's full. No, they're not. They're going to come and see that person. Why? Because that committee man or that committee man group or that chairman, that grassroots groups controls whether, you know, the ability for them to go into office or not. The committee men are the ones that get people onto the ballots. Today, of course, it's the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. You get to choose. Great choice. Anyway. We need to take that back, too. But that's kind of our secondary thing that we're doing. We're really focusing in order to take control, the people taking control, that is, we have to first take control of the judicial process. Then we can force the courts on the state and local levels to see the problems within the committee man process. But ultimately, none of them are elected. I've only had a few committee men that are elected. Those committee men were elected by myself, teaching them and other people teaching them the proper way of doing it. Very few people are teaching that. But we want to teach that. We want people to get involved at the political level. So we need to have consent of government by controlling the courts and controlling the political process. The other thing is...
Yeah, John?
Sorry. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's just me or if everybody's hearing your voices all chopped up right now.
Yeah, yours is chopped up a little bit.
Still chopped up.
Chopped up?
Terry, I think, can hear it chopped too. Does anybody else hear it as being chopped up, or are they all in the? They're all muted.
Everybody's muted. Well, let me unmute.
I can barely make out what you're saying.
All right, what I'm going to do is right here.
Let me see.
Yeah, you're choppy, John.
Yeah, you guys are too. Are you hearing each other choppy also?
I hear Terry fine.
And I hear Jan fine.
Okay, so it must be just me. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
come back in.
And Nikki said it's bad too.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, John. Try that. I can just barely make out what you're saying.
I'm going to open for a little bit of conversation while I pop out and pop back in. Okay. So let me unmute everyone and we'll go back to Q&A when I get back in. So I'll just put everyone... Okay, people have some conversation. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay, great. Well, that's a new one.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one before.
And what'll they think of next, huh? Wonder what's going on, huh?
Yes. It does make one wonder.
It certainly does. Well, while we're just waiting, I'm going to announce this later anyway, but we have some interesting speakers coming up for the Thursday night, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, Natural Healing Call. Any of you people that are working on cancer issues or know of someone that is, as well as many other diseases, we're going to have a fellow talk, his name is Harold Cohen, about Rife technology. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with Royal Rife. This guy came out, oh my God, 1920s, 30s, I forget the year. They gave him 16 terminal cancer patients, and he worked on all 16. And as far as I know, they all recovered within weeks. His technique was to use radiation at the proper frequency to excite the cancer cells and destroy them. And so by looking at a dark field microscope, he could keep track of the cell size and then keep varying the frequency until the seed sees the thing just poof, gone. And then he would irradiate people at that frequency. And so if you have more than one cancer or more than one type of cancerous cell, you just keep looking and destroying them. It's a very, very powerful technology. It's pretty well banned by the government, but now you can buy Rife machines in this country again. For a while, it was pretty much banned here 5-10 years ago, but they've come back. And this fellow has studied this for 10-20 years. He's even built his own Rife machines and so on. He's also very familiar with nutritional response testing, and I've always had a little problem with people who put everybody in the same box. The doctors do it, and I think a lot of the naturopaths do it as well. Everybody's the same, so we treat them all the same, and we put them on the same diet, and we do this and that. And you don't have to do that, because there are many different ways that you can test to see which things are good for you. I know there's many things that the traditional mainstream thinks is good for them, and it more than likely is, but it certainly isn't good for me. So you might want to listen to that one. That's a week from Thursday. And there's another treatment, which is, it's quite similar, actually, to the MMS. It's called ozone healing treatments, where they generate ozone. And I believe they inject it into the bloodstream or put it in water and have them consume it, which does much the same thing as MMS does, but by a different means. It's a great antioxidant, and that'll be the following week. So these techniques, the ozone and the Rife technology, can be used for a wide variety of different maladies and are very powerful and are not, overly expensive, unless maybe if you want to buy your own Rife machine. Good Rife machines are up around $4,000. But if you find someone who's giving treatments, that would be like a lot of chiropractors. In fact, I know one in my local area here that has a Rife machine and uses it on his clients. Those healing treatments are a little more difficult to come by. You remember Magic Johnson had AIDS back 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago?
Yeah,
and then he didn't have
AIDS.
Yeah,
it's longer than that. It's probably 15,
yeah.
15 years.
Yep, maybe 15. Well, it wasn't but a year, a little more than that. And he didn't have AIDS. And I read that he used the ozone healing treatments and cleared up his AIDS. So if you have AIDS people or no people, that's a possibility. The thing is, you have to find doctors that are willing to use it. I think my memory serves me, he went to West Virginia and got treatment there. So there's a whole host of modalities out there, and we've tried to cover a bunch of them. We have recordings on the website, and there is a list of the healers. It's not quite up to date because I've been traveling, but I'll get it up to date here in a day or two. Of all of the talks that we've had, and we've had some very interesting ones, and I've tried some of the techniques that they were espousing, and much to my surprise, maybe they did work as advertised. So, and they're not the traditional allopathic medicine treatments, and they're not using chemical, petrochemical drugs like the Rockefeller Institute would like you to do. So, John, where are you?
Not here. Maybe he's having to reboot his computer.
Yeah, I think he did have to. I don't know what would happen to make that chop up like that.
Yeah, it was just all of a sudden. He was going along clear and free.
Yep.
Can I put a plug in for my show?
Jump right in.
If you haven't looked at QAnon, it's out there, but there's a place covering it. There's a 24/7 live stream called We the People 24/7 Patriot Soapbox. If you just remember Patriot Soapbox, it'll get you there. And I have a show as part of one of those live streams. It's not every day, but I'm there. And I would love to have everybody who wants to come over and learn a little bit. All you got to do is go to YouTube, look up Patriot Soapbox, and you can join in the chat if you've got to log in to YouTube. And it's really good. Anybody can get a hold of me if they want to get involved with that. So there you go. Thank you, Jan.
Sure. Anytime you'd like to make an announcement, just let me know.
Okay. Well,
this is Jay from North Carolina.
Yeah.
Good evening.
I just wanted to say something that always bugs me whenever I hear anybody say it. When they say constitutional rights, my constitutional rights, it makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck.
And as well as should.
I say constitutionally protected rights. And everybody ought to try to get into that habit of saying constitutionally protected rights.
How about our God-given rights?
Well, but they're constitutionally protected. The Constitution is there to protect them. It doesn't give them to me. It can't take them away. It's there to protect
them. That's true. So,
I second that.
Okay, yeah. That's all I had.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we can. Yep.
Okay, how about unalienable rights secured by the Constitution?
Unalienable rights secured by the Constitution.
Right, because that's what it says. You know, if we go in and read the Constitution, that's actually what it says. Unalienable rights protected by the, secured by the Constitution. I'm out.
An interesting thing of that is that it mentions your unalienable rights in the Declaration of Independence. So you have them, period. And when you talk about the Constitution protecting your rights, you have your rights anyway, even without the Constitution's protection. And the Constitution is either a contract or a covenant. And some people say one, some people say the other. I don't know which John or Jan, which one you follow on that. But it's a contract to allow the government a certain amount of powers that they need to do to protect us and our rights and this country.
Right. So going back and making it real simple, their unalienable rights secured by the Constitution.
Yeah, I didn't say it was bad.
Right. Thanks, Terry. Bye.
Okay.
But didn't they breach the Constitution, Article 1,
Section 10? Oh, yeah.
10, when they took silver out of the coin?
Yes, they breached a lot of the Constitution all these things that they've done. And
okay,
it looks like
back.
John might be back. Okay, it's all yours, John.
Okay, thank you. It took me a while to get back here. I had to reboot everything, rebooted my computer and all, so pretty bad connection, I guess. Okay, let me just get back, and we'll try to get to an open forum in a few. Let me just cover a few more things, and then we'll move on. Looks like we're still being recorded. Okay, good. Let me put us – what I'm going to do is I'm going to put us over into Q&A. Anybody who wants to get into the Q&A, have a question or a comment, star 6 to get into the queue. I think it'll ask you to hit star 1 also, but whatever it tells you to do, do. And you can ask questions. We'll start calling on people. Just to finish off, I'm not going to get any more deeper than what I already have. The key thing is consent, of government. And this is the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. Purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to facilitate communications amongst the people, the Liberty Alliances across the nation and every state, for organizing, bringing communications together, and educating them. And then the people being empowered through that education and through communicating with each other and organizing locally and around the nation, then they could take power on the grassroots level. But we do have to be somewhat educated before we could do this. We just can't go in there and decide to do make it up. There is a process, and it's a simple process. This is not complex. Remember, we're looking at natural law, which is common law, that which is common unto all men. And it's really pretty much common sense, that which is right and just ultimately. And everybody has a sense of what's right and wrong. Everybody has a sense of justice. Very few people have their conscience seared so severely that they cannot discern right from wrong. As a matter of fact, even serial killers know what they're doing is wrong. They do it anyway. They don't seem to have a conscience, but they know it's wrong. They know they shouldn't be doing it. But anyway, this is simple stuff. There's some process and procedures. We have to learn some new things, but it's not rocket science. You're not going to need 4 years in school and college. This can all be self-taught in a relatively short period of time. People also should be able to learn very quickly how to go and defend and take care of their business in court, their legal matters. This is all simple stuff. It is true they have a priestly hood going on, and they try to make it difficult, and they don't tell you how things work, and you have to figure it out. But we figured it out. We're going to teach a lot of people this whole process. And there are others we've learned from, of course, that they figured it out too. Okay. So we need to take back the courts, we need to take the judicial process, we need to take back the political process. And remember, through indictments, you know, the power and the authority of we the people to indict, okay, when an individual is in bad behavior, they're not to be serving no more. We need to get them out of office. And one of the ways we can get them out of office, indict them. Once they're indicted, they have to resign or put their position on hold. You know, they cannot continue until the court case is dealt with. There's an example of a couple of congressmen. One congressman particularly, I can't think of his name. What is his name? Anyway, he was indicted, and he's in jail right now, as a matter of fact. So obviously he can't continue in office. So when these people are in bad behavior, what is bad behavior? Bad behavior is not being obedient to the law of the land, the Constitution, that which gives them power and authority that they come and act under what is called the color of law, and they abuse it. Well, we can remove them from office. We can straighten them out. We can send them a message, you know, either, you know, stop your evil ways or we're going to consider you for indictment. The committee men can recall them. Taking funny money up there, out there in Washington, really, that's taking a bribe as far as I'm concerned. Nothing short of. How can you go get elected to office and then go and claim to represent the people and instead you represent people who are giving you all that funny money? You know, it's called a bribery. There's no other word for it. And that's bad behavior. They need to be taken out of office. So we also can control, how long we want a person in office. We know basically presidents serve only 8 years, two terms, and that's it. Some of these congressmen and other people in office, they're there forever, okay? Never was meant to be. Well, the committee man can control that. We the people on a grassroots level just don't support them any more than two terms or whatever it is that the people decide. It's all their business on the local level. So this is the message of National Liberty Alliance, consent of government, okay, and how to do it. And we need to get back to this particular message. We haven't been really talking much about it, mostly because we kind of presume everybody knows what we're talking about, but we get a lot of new members, and they may not have heard this message. So we're going to have to repeat this over and over again. And again, we're working on some courses and getting this paper written, which again will be an education in itself. Okay, let's move on to other things here. Let's see. We still have the campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You know, we haven't really moved much from last time. We have about $14,000, but we need for a total of $55,000 for this particular project. And this is an extremely important project. You know, everybody should give an extra $5, $10, $20, $50, one-time thing. If everybody would have given, $50 or $100 or $20, even $5, if all our members gave $5, we'd be able to do this pretty quickly. But anyway, We figured out that to buy booklets, we figured about 100,000 booklets we need to buy, which would be pocketbooks about the size of the Constitution booklets, that, you know, pocket-sized booklets. But it'll probably be at least three times the thickness. There is a lighter weight paper out there, so that helps with weight, also helps with cost, and it's pretty strong. We figure that if it costs us 35 cents each to have them made, 100,000 would cost us $35,000. Mailing to approximately 3,100 sheriffs, we figured sending 20 handbooks to each one. It's about 20 ounces through media mail. It's about $650 each. Comes another $20,150 for a total of $55,000. So that's the cost of that project, and it's a very important project to be able to get a sheriff's handbook into the hands of all sheriffs, especially with what's going on emptying out the swamp out there in D.C. and ultimately across the nation, really, but it starts out there in D.C. And, and our movement here to take control of the people, to take control of the justice courts on the grassroots level, which is their duty, their right, their unalienable right to do. The people need to control the courts, must control the courts. We cannot permit, nor never was it considered to be permitted, that any political animals would control our courts. And that's exactly what we have. We got to stop that. Also, we have to take back control of the political process. So these are the things we have to do. We don't have a choice. We need to learn about them. Okay, and the sheriffs need to have an education in the Constitution, and that's the purpose of this book. You can get a copy of this book, but we're going to be adding to this booklet, maybe make some changes in it also. We've got a PDF copy. You can find it on our front page, nationallibertyalliance.org. So click on our front page, click on our page, and you should find it pretty quickly. It's towards the top. New York Safe Act lawsuit. I know we spoke last week about doing something. I had some notes. I don't see them right now, but we do have a possible solution for pushing that case ahead because it's kind of just stuck in limbo there. The judge was supposed to make a decision on that back in February, March, April. I think it was April 19th? Let me think about that. Was it June? I don't remember. Do you remember, Jan, when he was supposed to make a decision?
I think it was June 19th, I think.
June 19th. I knew it was the 19th. April or June. Okay, so June. So there's July, August, September, and we're coming into October. 3-plus months, and this guy, beyond his time that he said he'd make a decision on that. We did have an idea of a paper to put in. I don't see the note on what that's called, but I'll look that up, and we're going to continue to pursue that. So we want to get back on track. We want to get as many, we want to get interviews. When we were doing interviews, we were growing a lot. We haven't been doing many interviews in the past year or so, and we're still growing, but it's slow. But when we go out and talk on radio and TV, a lot of YouTuber things, we always find that we get a big shot in the arm in membership. So we need to do that. So we made a list of things that we need volunteers for. So please, everyone should get involved. Volunteer an hour a week, an hour a month or something. Get a hold of Jan. You can find his phone number and his email address up on NationalLibertyAlliance.org, click on directory, and he should be up towards the top. And his email address is jan@NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Let him know how you might want to get involved or learn more about other things we're doing, but he's going to be a list of some things. We used to have someone who transcribed some of our audio files. We're looking for someone who can do that. So anybody, one or more people who are interested in transcribing for us, pretty much, part of Monday night programs and maybe other conversations we may have. And a lot of these conversations will be the things that will be put in the book and in the course that we're putting together. And by the way, working on the court case, working on the book, and working on the course that we're trying to get up, which we've been real months behind, but in any event, those three things really are being done at the same time. Because the book's going to contain all of this stuff, and the course is going to contain a lot of this stuff. And between the book and the course should be sufficient, really, to have the knowledge to know how the courts work, know how to work within the courts, the process, the procedures, the different forms, how things work, just how things work. It's that simple. And so that we're working on that, and I'm hoping to get the course up soon. But again, the court case is going to take precedence. The course will take second, and the book will be third. But they should be pretty close behind each other. Once we get the court case done, a lot of that stuff's going to go into the course, and we've got a lot of stuff already written. We just got to sew it together, so to speak. But some of these conversations we have, some of these things, maybe we'll teach a little bit every Monday about something, and we'd need someone to transcribe those areas so that it'd be easier than put it right into the book. You know, we just have to kind of sew it together. We'll make it work, categorize it, and so on. Okay, so we need anybody who can help us transcribe. Please get a hold of Jen. And even if it's only occasionally, if we have a few people who could do it occasionally, we can get it done. We can get a lot done. We also need a committee to come together to work to get myself and Gerard out into public talk shows. Again, we want to get on YouTube. There's a lot of activity going on with Q and a lot of people reporting. A lot of different programs I'd like to go on and talk with people. They have large listenerships. And this is the message they need. What do they have to do? What can they do? What can they do grassroots? You know, what is the most important thing? And the knowledge that they need to have in order to do these things and also to understand, you know, their liberties. So anybody who would like to help us to, we'll kind of brainstorm a list of different places, and other people can give us ideas, and anybody working on this can make a list of things, of places where we can get interviewed so we can get our message out. And that'll bring us greater growth and hopefully more donations so that we can get more deeply involved in the projects we have. Particularly the Sheriff's Project. We really need to get that going. It's an educational process. The sheriff doesn't know the law. You know, I know we've talked about this a few times in the past, where a conversation we had with a sheriff who said, you know, he just doesn't know the Constitution. Well, that's the case of everyone that seems to be in elected office these days. None of these people know the Constitution. They don't even know that we're not a democracy. They don't even know that our founding fathers were appalled by democracies. They don't know that democracies is the stepping stone for an oligarchy. That's the first thing. You want to take over a nation, turn it into a democracy, work it through that process, and becomes an oligarchy. And that's what we've had for quite some time, you know, an oligarchy, a group of people behind one man, a president, controlling everything, the deep state. We also can use paralegals, whether they're you know, school paralegals or they self-taught. However, we need people who can help us with paperwork. We'd like to get back to habeas corpuses and non-judicial foreclosures, but we need people to help us work this paperwork. You know, we just don't have enough manpower. We also need people to help with the welcoming committee, you know, making some phone calls. Even if it's 5 calls a week, if that's all you can do, fine. Volunteer to make 5 calls a week. You know, 100 people making 5 calls a week, that's 500 calls. Okay, so look at, let's, even 10 people making 5 calls a week, that's 50 calls. And we need to welcome the people that are coming into the program, reminding them of who we are and kind of refreshing their mind a little bit, especially catch them when they first join. Welcome them in, give them an idea as where to start, tell them about the Monday night program. Keep them on point and on focus of the message that we need to get out to the people in order to have government by consent. So please, if you can help with the welcoming committee. I'd like to get a small group together. And again, get a hold of Jan if you're interested in this one. We worked out a table of contents, and you know, we've got a lot of things written on a lot of these areas, and we're just bringing things together. And but I think the past week we really kind of got the court case, which was suing the judiciary. Okay, for those who don't know, We're going to sue the federal judiciary, the United States Supreme Court, the House Judiciary Committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the judicial, what was it called, the judicial, the Attorney General. What's that agency called? The Justice, whatever that is, I forget.
Yeah,
but anyway,
Department of Justice.
I guess we can call it that, but there is another name, but that's good enough. Department of Justice, okay? We need to go after those people because, look it, and we're going to be very careful on how we put together. We're going to keep up holding up the olive branch. We're going to make the point that we know that everyone isn't crooked, but it certainly seems like it. And for some reason, everybody's got their mouth shut. They're not opening it. You know, these people took an oath to serve and protect and uphold the Constitution. And if they see subversion, they have a duty to do something about it. Do not tell me that the justices, if we want to call them justices, I hope we can call them justices, of the justices on the United States Supreme Court, please do not tell me that they are not aware of the fact that you cannot get into a court of record anywhere. Tell me that they don't know that we, the people, are being charged to get into our own courts of justice, charged money. Don't tell me that they haven't statutorized or made everything what's called a nisi prius court and brought us under fraud, under so many different statutes that has nothing to do with we, the people. Don't tell me that they don't know. That they are really destroying our liberties at so many levels. When you see this table, when the case is finally written and you look at the table of contents, it's really going to be an eye-opener, I think, on how many violations, USC title violations, how many violations against the Constitution, point by point by point by point. I mean, it is just overwhelming. You can't tell me that they don't know. You can't tell me that they don't know that USC Title 18 is the law of the sea and not the law of the land. And you can't tell me that they don't know that people are going to jail for being enforced for the law of the sea when they're on the law of the land and they're supposed to be going to justice courts under the law of the land, the Constitution. You can't tell me that they don't know about it. Judges can't rule if they don't understand it. I listened to the hearings with Kavanaugh here, and they talked about different bodies of law. He knew. He understood. Don't tell me they don't understand. How could a federal judge rule and not understand the jurisdictions that he's in? They know. You know, maybe the lawyers are dummies, but these judges, they know. Federal judges, at least. Maybe the state judges, you know, they're brain dead to begin with, maybe, but federal judges, they know. U.S. attorneys, they know. The Department of Justice, they know. The United States Supreme Court, they know. The Judiciary Committee should know. Whether it's the Senate or the House, they should know. Well, we're going to let them know. And that's what this court case is all about. This is the line in the land, the line in the sand, okay? And this is where the rubber's going to meet the road. We're going to send a copy as an information to President Trump, okay? And of course, we're going to get copies to all these individuals who are suing. We only have to serve the U.S. attorney, but we're going to send them all a copy. And we'll probably send copies to others, a lot of copies maybe. And it should be an education. We're going to write it up that way, that we are educating the individuals reading this. The people who are reading this case need to understand, and the people that were interested to read this case and understand is we, the people. The people need to understand. And this case is being written in such a way, in such a fashion, and with, you know, lots of footnotes to give authorities and understanding and meanings of words and things and phrases, so that you could be educated as you read through this, because we need to know. We need to understand how bad it really is. I knew it was bad, and I've been making notes on this for a long time, but putting this case together, boy, is it bad. Well, anyway, we got this table of contents, okay? I want to get a copy to Jan. I want to drop it into your Skype hopefully tonight before the program's over, but if not, I'll catch you in the morning, get a hold of me. And I'd like to get a small group of people to get together and brainstorm, to go through this list and see, is there anything we're missing? Is there any thoughts or ideas about the things we're going to cover, you know, and kind of add to this table of contents? And again, we're going to come in with an olive branch. We're going to come in with a threat at the same time. Anybody gets in the way of justice in this court that belongs to the people and not to any judge or anyone, individual who thinks they have some kind of authority in this court. No, only the trial jury is going to have authority in this courtroom. No judge, no magistrate. Magistrate is only to be a traffic cop. We'll talk about who that might be. We'll let them know. We'll think about it. We'll negotiate on who that could be. But anybody who sticks their fingers into this case to derail it in any way, shape, or form, we're going to hopefully indict them. As a matter of fact, brings me up to a point I didn't make a note of. I'm thinking next week. I'm thinking potentially Tuesday. Jan, think about this. What's a good day and a good time? I'm thinking 9 o'clock is a good time. We want to call together the grand jury. We'll send a message out to all of our membership. Anyone can come and sit in as a grand jurist. Anybody who's a member, even if you're not a member, if you hear about it and come to the meeting, you're one of the people, you can sit in and listen and make a vote. But we're going to ask...
That's early for California people.
Well, what time do you want to do it? 10 o'clock?
Well, 3 hours difference, John.
So what time do you want to do it, 10?
Well, 11. 11.
Well, it's too late for New Yorkers then. I think 10 would be a good compromise. It's only going to be about a 10-minute meeting. We're going to send the question out what people are going to be voting on, okay? What we're going to ask is this. We're going to ask the grand jury. Anybody who comes in, be part of that grand jury. We're going to ask for an automatic indictment for anybody, whether it's the United States Supreme Court, the federal judiciary, or anybody in any level, the Justice Department, who tries to stick their finger into this case to prevent it from going forward, to derail it in any way, or to prevent anything from going forward. We want to be able to let them know that we've already agreed to indict any person who gets into the way. So as anybody gets in the way, we're going to start putting names and filing indictments in our depository case, which we're going to make reference to through our court case here. We put into the courts hundreds of papers already, hundreds and hundreds of documents. And all of that is really evidence that we're using to make our case. That and much, much more. Much, much more. So anyway, anybody who's interested in taking a look at this list and also, like I said, I think a Tuesday at 10 o'clock. Does that sound good, Jen?
You're talking evening or morning?
Oh, yeah, in the evening. Yeah.
You know, 9 o'clock in the evening is fine.
Oh, well, you're confusing me today.
I thought you said a.m.
Oh, boy, no. No, it'll be in the evening. Okay, let's do it at 9 because hopefully everyone will be back by then from work and on the West Coast, but most of the people throughout should be. But 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time next Tuesday in this room, we will put out an email and we'll put exactly the question on what we're looking to ask the grand jury to agree to for indictments for anyone who sticks their toes or their fingers into this case to derail it. We want to be able to say, let them know right up front, consider yourself indicted, because we will name you and put you into this case as an indicted individual that we intend on trying, you know. But in any event, we want to talk to the people, let them know that we're not chasing anyone. We're not running anyone down. We're expecting them to get behind us. We're expecting them to communicate with us, to come to agreement, to discuss it with us, and help us, because the case speaks for itself. It's such a violation on everything that we are as a people here in America. It's such a violation on every level. This court is guilty of so many violations. And again, when you see this case written up, it's going to blow your mind on how bad it really is. So anyway, getting back to the other side of this, anybody who wants to work on that table of contents, get on hold of Jan. Jan, set something up. Let's do it this week, preferably, because the case is pretty well structured now in my mind, and we're writing. And anything new coming in, I'd like to get it in there sooner than later. So let's say before Friday, if you can get a couple of people, the more the merrier, to brainstorm the table of contents and help us to consider things we might be missing. Okay?
Yep. Maybe we can try tomorrow if you get that information to me.
Yeah, I'll drop it tonight in your Skype. You can remind me before the program ends, maybe. Okay, let's see. What else do we have here? I guess we'll move. Is Brent here tonight? I don't see Brent. Okay, well, usually we move over to Brent, so I don't see him here, so
yep,
we're not going to move
see
over
him
to
either.
Him. Okay, is Gerard here? I don't see
he
Gerard
was,
here.
He had signed in.
Well, maybe he'll be back. Okay, we'll go right over to Q&A then. Unless there's some questions that were emailed in?
There are no questions tonight, but I kind of wanted to make a couple comments.
Go right ahead.
You have addressed almost all of them, but, you know, John, you put videos on the website weekly or daily. I put video lists in the newsletter. Gary Will puts them out. And, you know, we don't do that for our health. We're trying to keep people up to speed to let them know what's going on. If you've read those or listened to them, some of them are audio, some video, and so on, you'll realize that things are really heating up, cleaning up the swamp. Now, what I've been reading in the last week or so says that the National Guard is going to be used to do these arrests. And the last I saw, there were like 51,400 sealed indictments currently. And that was
do you know how many unsealed indictments there are? Do you know how many others are filed? Do you know the number on that? I saw the number today. I couldn't believe it. There's about 51,000 sealed indictments.
Yeah.
There's a little over 5,000 that were sealed and are unsealed, okay? And
right.
There is 70,000 other indictments that have not been sealed, and they just haven't been executed yet, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking...
There's 55,000 indictments that are unsealed, or not sealed, they're sealed right
yeah,
now.
I think there's 51,000, there's 4,000 and change, or 5,000 that has been unsealed. They were sealed and unsealed already,
right.
People being arrested. There's 51,000, maybe there's more than that, but there's 51,000 still sealed. There's 80-some-odd people, executive COs across the nation, big corporations that have resigned. I think it was 80-something. And there's 70,000 indictments that have not been sealed, nor have they been unsealed. They're up there. They just haven't executed them yet. So you're talking about 120, 125,000 indictments at this point in time. That's a huge number. So, but go ahead, Jim.
Right. And from what I've been reading is when the National Guard is called, that means they're starting to go after all of these people that are listed in the sealed indictments, and they're not going to be starting with the little fish necessarily. Now, what does that mean? That means that NLA needs to concentrate on reaching our goal of setting up common law administrators in all 3,133 counties, because we could be called upon to establish administrators in the very near future. Now, every time, you know, we mention this number, 3,133 weekly, maybe twice weekly, three times weekly, and every time you do, it's like people's eyes glaze over. It's like they're vaccinated, so they can't understand what that means. If we had half of our membership go out tomorrow morning and sign up to be administrators, and they were equally distributed throughout the counties, that would only give us one per county throughout the country. If the entire membership went, and that would only be two, we need twice the number of administrators that we have as membership. That's huge. That's gigantic. We've been sitting there at about 1,024 for I don't know how long. apparently new people that come in are not signing up to be administrators. We need to get some advertising, get maybe the welcome committee volunteers going on this. We need people, and we need them now. We don't need them way down the road.
That's one of the things that I'm talking about that I've been faulty on, I think, and that is we haven't been on top of our core message. And the welcoming committee, this should be their main focus when they're talking to people about the core message of building administrations across this nation in every county, 4 people per county. And in some counties will require more, but the minimum is 4. New York City, for instance, you know, some of those counties down there have 1 million or close to 1 million people in it. So, you know, they may need 8 administrators, but generally most 4. So that's the key message we need to get out. And that was the message I tried to get out tonight. And that's the message we're going to get out to wherever we can speak about it, whether it be on YouTube, radio, TV, whatever we can get on to. We need to get the message out. People need to get educated, and they need to understand that this is not that difficult. You know, after a while, it kind of just becomes, you know, old hat. It's like anything else in life. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, now about welcome committee members. It'll only take you like 5 minutes to call someone. And I know a lot of people are allergic to calling people, apparently. But maybe it's time now, since we're working to save the Republic, for people to step up and say, hey, I'm willing to call some people. We even have scripts that people can use to call. You don't have to do this extemporaneously. Just follow the script that has the information that we need, whether you're talking to new members or you're talking to old members. So we really need help there. We need welcome committee volunteers. Now, you already hit the new committee for the public talk shows and stuff like that. And the transcriber, we definitely need a transcriber. We do not have anyone that filled in after Kelly and her husband resigned. Paralegals, we need a minimum 1. 2 would be great. Now, the last thing I would like to mention is we could use some more people that are familiar with natural healing techniques that would like to talk on Thursday night at 8 to our natural healing call. Now, we have 3 great ones coming up here. This week, we have Harold Cohen, who's going to talk about Rife technology, Rife machines. He spent probably 20 years studying the Rife machines, actually built some on his own and uses them. The following week, we're going to be talking about, if I can find it here, where did it go? It went away. Hold on a sec. It went farther away. Anyway, we have 3 calls set up this Thursday, next Thursday, and the Thursday after. The last one will be about using ozone to heal things. Ozone is a very powerful healer. It's very similar to MMS in its use. So if you have nothing to do and would like to be a little bit educated, or you're suffering from a malady, you know, people who have cancer or other major diseases, you might want to check into our Thursday night's calls at 8 o'clock Eastern. And remember, 3,133 is a huge number. We need to get going on that and get something done there. And that's all I have, John.
Okay, thank you. And what do we have, 1,012 or 1,013 people signed up?
1,024
people signed up for administrators.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is a career job. This is something that, you know, it will pay decent, and it's a job. It's a regular job. You work it every day in the court system, and it's a fulfilling job because the administrators are the investigative body for the grand jury. When the grand jury comes together, you know, before the grand jury is pulled together, you know, people will be reporting and asking and looking to solve problems, and they'll be talking to the administrators, and they'll have the opportunity to investigate things, make some phone calls. A lot of things could be solved with just a few phone calls, and you can fix the problem. But if you can't fix them, then you know, we could do some investigation. Or if the grand jury, in working out some, listening to people, talking to people, learning about different potential things they might want to indict on or whatever, they may decide they want to look into things. Well, we can empower them because they're the grand jury. They're really empowered themselves. But we can make the phone calls and open up avenues so that these people can go into government offices or places that they need to go to investigate to see what's going on, and then make decisions and bring it before the jury. You know, the original grand jury, the first grand jury, which goes back to the Magna Carta, talked about, I believe it was four, that if someone was, you know, injured in some way, they'd come and talk to the people, and four would go out to try to fix the problem. And if they couldn't fix the problem, they'd bring it back to the whole body, the 25. And the 25 would try to fix it, and if not, then indict. You see, that's the way justice should work. We can solve a lot of problems without even going into court. We can prevent a lot of problems when these people working for a government agency start to get phone calls from local administrators saying, what's going on there? What do you mean you can't give this person this information? What are you telling me? They got to wait till next week to get it. You know, what's involved with it? You know, I remember going to the, down to the, goodness, what do they call that office? Where you go to register for voting,
the clerk.
No. There's each county has a office. There's a Democrat and the Republicans are in there. One's on the right side, the other's on the left side. I forget the name of it. You go down there and you can get the walking lists. You register for voting there. Oh, I forget what it is. But I went down there to get a voting list, okay, one in my district. I wanted to get a copy. And they told me I had to come back next week. And I wanted it quicker, but they said, oh, you got to come back next week. We'll get it for you by Thursday, whatever it was. And I came back. I walked in the office. I said, okay, I'm here. And what are you here for? Well, I want to pick up the walking list for my particular election district so I can walk as a committee man. And they said, oh, okay, and I was here last week. You told me to come in here this day and at this time, and you'd have it for me. And the woman says, oh, okay. And she went over to the computer. I think I gave her a CD. Went over to the computer, stuck the CD into the computer, hit a couple of buttons. In 20 seconds, it was popping out. She gave it to me. She says, here we go. I said, you couldn't do this a week ago? You made me wait a whole week for you to do 35 seconds of work. Okay, and this is the problems we have with a lot of these agencies. Okay, it's the election something. I can't think of what the name of that is. But in any event, we could fix these problems. And once they know that we the people are on top of them, then they'll start doing the right thing and acting the right way. Okay, what else we got there, Jen? Are we done? Am I being heard?
Yeah, you're
Terry,
being heard.
Terry, you there? Okay,
yeah,
maybe Jan.
I'm here. Can you hear me? I think
okay,
Jan is
okay, Jan's muted. He's muted. Okay. All right, I think we're done with everything, so we'll move on. We'll go to an open forum. If anybody has any questions or comments, we do have a few people in the queue right now, star 6 to get into the queue. Questions, comments, and please, everybody think about volunteering some time. You know, we have to, if we're going to save America, it's the people that have to do it. We have to fill that void. It's going to be left when the deep state is taken out. If the people don't step up and take control of this, someone else is going to come back in and take control again, and we'll be back in the same boat. Okay. First caller, don't have a name here, just anonymous. Go right ahead. You've been unmuted.
Hey, John and Janet. Yes, hi. It's Jeff Gall.
Jeff, how
are you?
How are you doing, Jeff?
Good,
hey,
good.
You
hey.
Be interested in getting a hold and getting involved in this table of contents project.
Yeah, I mean, that's the primary reason for me getting involved in this call. I mean, I've tried to reach out to Jan. I know he's really busy, but I have not had any responses from him, and I really need to be part of that.
So
that is my primary, you know, purpose. But, you know, just and you know me, I'm lightning fast. I don't take a lot of time in my interactions here, but. Just one thing I ask you guys to consider, though, when you're talking about indicting these folks for, you know, derailing, I, you know, the courts have gotten real clever. Our servants have gotten real clever with, you know, how they, what, you know, what language they use. You know, it's not only you know, whether they're you know, derailing, but whether they're given the appearance of the intent to derail. And you know, so I ask you guys to really think about that language that you use. You know, that's my number one point. But
well, if we, you know, it riles them if we can perceive what they are perceiving, so to speak, beforehand, so that we can touch base on that in our conversation in this paper.
Right.
And this paper is going, you know, again, it's going to be really extraordinary. I mean, almost everything we do is extraordinary, but there is precedence for a lot of things that we can use to support why we're doing and how we're doing it. After all, we could make it up as we go anyway, because we're the people. We're the ones, we're the ordainers and the establishers of these things, you know? So,
right.
But the thing is that we want to make it clear, you know, that they should be working with us. And we're hoping that when we lay this particular paper out, that it becomes so clear in the writings, it just becomes so clear how far they have come off base of justice, and to realize that, you know, something needs to be done. And I think a lot of them, well, a lot of them are crooks anyway. They were chosen because they were crooks, I think. But there are a lot of them out there, I guess, that really are kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and they're just kind of rolling with the punches. They can't do this or they can't do that because, for whatever reason or another, you know, they get things on everybody. They put the pressure on everyone. I mean, right. if they can't, you know, blackmail you to control you, and they can't pay you off to control you, then they'll start threatening to control you. And if necessary, depending on how important it is from their position, they'll kill you to control.
Right.
And that's pretty bad.
Yeah, certainly is. Well, and one of the things, I mean, to me, I don't know, I've been preaching this for a long time, and really, I have to say that no one seems to really agree with me that this is so important. But, you know, when this country was founded, there were two factions. And we can refer to them today as the Democratic and the Republican, Republican-minded faction that had, you know, conceived our exclusive republic. And that's so important because our republic is like no other republic. Any other republic in existence has been led by an elite few. Usually men.
That's because the Constitution for their republic was written by them, and that's the
right.
key. You know, a republic is as good as its constitution.
No, absolutely. So, but I mean, I so many times I hear people talk about the fact that we're a republic, and they seem to be confused, you know, with our republic and every other republic. Our republic is not like any other. And so, but my main point, though, is that those factions were democracy, democratic, versus our exclusive republic. And, you know, what to me, one of the more frustrating facts is when I hear an idiot that's not a registered Democrat talk about our democracy, it just angers me, because that person, in my opinion, should not even be in office, because they don't even know what the words mean. But, you know, I have a 1957 Webster, and it defines Democrat. It shows that Democrat and democracy are synonymous. And that just brings us back to when this country was founded. We had two factions. And the Democratic, those that wanted a democracy, not the rights that we have with our republic, you know, live on. And now the Democrat Party is even referring to themselves as a Democratic or a Democracy Party. And, you know, I don't understand why, you know, the majority of the country is not taking them down, at their knees.
Well,
because,
you know, there's a saying out there, repeat a lie often enough, and everyone eventually will
believe it. Yeah.
And that's the problem.
That's
They've been
happened.
Telling
oh.
us we're a democracy long before I was born.
Right. No, that's
and,
right.
And they've been working on this and working on this. The enemy has been working on this. But, yeah, it's amazing. I've heard two justices already. I think Stevens is one of them. And, well, that woman, what's her name? It looks like she's about ready to retire or fall over anyway. what's her name? No, that's the other one. There's one woman very old. Anyway, I heard her talking. And they talk of us as being a democracy. When you have United States Supreme Court justices claiming that we are a democracy, we have a problem.
Yes, big time.
And we need to fix it. And the only way, there's only one way this can be fixed. It's called education.
Right.
That's it.
Well,
there is no other way.
Well, so, I mean, I've actually had this discussion with, I think, literally, well, certainly dozens of people where I would say, no, democracy and Democrat or Democratic, they're all synonymous. And they would say, no, you're out of your mind, Jeff. So I just my grandparents had a 1957 Webster dictionary, pocket dictionary, and I, you know, somehow now am in possession of it. And it shows that that's the definition. And, you know, idiot lawyers will say, well, the definition has changed, but the reality of it is, and even our U.S. Supreme Court has been sophisticated enough, generally speaking, to acknowledge the fact that we must embrace the definitions, you know, that have been in existence, you know, for a long period, not the new definitions, like dictionary.com is a fraud. I mean, I believe that that's an anti-America source for definitions, because, I mean, you look at some of their definitions, I mean, they're totally inconsistent with what we've had, you know, for you know, dozens of decades. And anyway, so the courts have held that, you know, that those long-standing definitions are the ones that we must embrace, we must rely on, and you know, so I have a dictionary that's 60 years old, and you know, it proves to these idiots that that faction has existed from day one, and that our politicians today, you know, whether you want to call them conservative, Democrat, Republican, liberal, whatever you want to call them, they all seem to refer to our government as a democracy, and that makes them look either dishonest or stupid. And neither one is acceptable to me as one of the people. I mean, you know, these they're supposed to be there serving us.
Well, it's all about control. It's all about control. And, you know, when you look into the Black's Law Dictionary, for instance, and you really look to see, for instance, the courts. I mean, there's 50-some-odd different courts that are spoken about inside of Black's Law. I did a study on this, and I need to do maybe a memorandum on it and maybe combine that also with the U.S. Code study. But there are 50-some-odd different courts. What's up with all these courts? Now, it is true that some of these courts are necessary because different jurisdictions, you know, obviously, you know, there's a maritime jurisdiction. So the court is the same, you know, the building and the judges in that courtroom. And sometimes they'll call them chancellors, and that's really an assault upon the republic. But nevertheless, it's an assault upon really justice. But you know, it'll be judges, and they come into a court. It's the same building or something, but the jurisdiction is what's open for that time period that they're going to discuss and deal with. And I remember hearing a while back someone said that it's very dangerous. As a matter of fact, it was one of the lawyers that taught me, and you know, the process. And he says, you know, you go into federal court, jurisdiction changes as the conversation moves on, okay? And that's a very important realization. People need to realize that. And when I'm in a federal court, I've seen it happen myself. And you can see the jurisdiction change by the conversation, what they're discussing, where they're going with. But bear in mind, there may be 50-some-odd courts. And again, there are 54 different titles of law here in the United States. 27 of them have been enacted, which means it's actual law. They have the power and the authority to fine and incarcerate. And the other ones are administrative. You know, they can fire or fine. I guess, I'm not sure how far they can go in those courts. But you see, once you agree to them, you're agreeing to whatever they say inside the structure anyway. So, but the thing is, all of that said and put together, there's only one justice court. There's only one court that is the court of the people, and that operates under common law or natural law, whichever word you want to use. And that is the key.
I prefer natural law.
Right, that's the key. Well, I do too, but people hear common more often, and it is a commonly word used in the conversation. So you kind of get
right
back to the common law, and you read the U.S. decisions. They used common law before they used natural law. But then there's positive law, a play on words, like I said earlier. You know, positive law is human law. But the thing is, well, anything that has to do with the people, that's natural law. That's common law. Anything else, it doesn't apply to us.
Right.
That's for corporations or elected or appointed individuals or employed people. It's not for us.
Well, you know, John, just, I mean, there's like two analogies I want to throw out here, because one of the stupid, you know, facts is that lawyers who have taken over our country and destroyed it somehow, and this is in the scheme of things not that important, but, you know, they've taken over the word attorney. Well, you know, the actual definition of attorney is not a lawyer. It's someone consulting someone in their affairs. And, you know, I, as a public adjuster, you know, I fight insurance companies. I help people with their claims. I'm an attorney by definition. I'm a counselor by definition. But, mm-hmm. we're allowing these lawyers to, you know, take over our mindset and you know, act as if...
Well, they snuck in on us on midnight, and they've been here since, and they're minions of the New World Order, and they're everywhere. You can't talk to anyone in government without, after a while, realize you're going to be talking with a lawyer. Immediately, the lawyers turn up. Any letter, any conversation, the return call is a lawyer. Right? All the time. Well, I don't want to talk to you. These are the people who have the duty to speak, not you. What are you calling me for? But that's what it is. They've controlled the whole thing. And they've all been compromised in their schooling. You know, they've been thoroughly, you know, what's the word? Well, I'll use compromised. And their thinking is just New World Order thinking. So they're there to make sure the
control.
New World Order's right.
Yeah. Absolutely. 100%. I mean, you know, it's crazy. It's frustrating. But, you know, those of us that are paying attention, I mean, you know, it doesn't make sense. And you know, unfortunately, though, the value of that, you know, the fact that those of us are paying attention, it doesn't make sense. There's not really any value unless we put a stop to it.
Right.
You know, just knowing it is just not enough, you know, to have any value. Anyway, so.
Oh, by the way, I didn't mention this in the list earlier today. I have mentioned it before. We are suing the Bar Association also, because they have a monopoly on the whole process, and so
well,
we have to sue them.
I mean, John, there may be something. Actually, I wasn't even thinking about NLA with this, but okay. So as a public adjuster, I was, and I'll give you a real quick overview, but between the states of Texas and Florida, I was involved in a situation where a Texas lawyer was sending letters to and calling individuals in the state of Florida, lying to them, saying that he had a lien on their claim because somebody that he was saying was involved in their claim was entitled to money. And see, he actually was able to stop in some of these claims. He was able to stop the insurance company from issuing payment to the rightful, you know, people that, you know, that had money coming, because he had his law firm's name and this individual's name on their checks, which means, you know, they're useless. And I filed a complaint with both the Florida bar and his Texas bar. Florida said, well, listen, this is not our jurisdiction. You have to go to Texas. So they did nothing. The Texas bar said, well, we feel that he did nothing wrong. And to me, and I have to formulate a letter to both bars. I have to make sure it gets to the right places in those bars. But it's huge from my perspective because, like, for example, in Florida, as a public adjuster, that bar association has long claimed that a public adjuster, unlike every other, almost every other state, we're not allowed to interpret the laws, which is really our job, the law as it applies to an insurance policy, you know, that I'm adjusting. I mean, I have to know what the policy means, and so I have to know the law. Well, state of Florida has long said that we can't. So the point is that these two bars are saying, well, it's okay if a lawyer sends a letter to a state that he's not licensed in and claims he's a lawyer and directs you to do something and basically threatens you to do something, it's okay. And, you know, so from my perspective,
well, the problem,
I'm saying...
The problem is, though, in the way things are set up, you're never going to get that fixed, or it's a huge, huge uphill battle. It's going to cost you a lot of time and money, you know, especially if you're going to use lawyers to fight this battle.
Yes.
But the bottom line is it's really fraud, and it's a criminal action, in my opinion. And if we, the people, had control of our courts, guess what? You go down and talk to the grand jury. Grand jury,
right.
You know, hey, the administrators can make the phone calls and try to fix the problem. And if they can't, then they put, when the grand jury comes in, you know, hey, this is the problem. We think you should indict these people. But if you want to make a call, see if you could fix it first. You know, hey, come on up to the office, make the call, let them know who you are, you know, and see if you can't fix it over the phone and make them do the right thing. And if that can't happen, then an indictment is called for.
Right.
They could bring it up before the whole grand jury for the indictment, get their vote, and then bring it into a court of justice. And you don't have to pay the money to fight. In a court of justice, you know, if this is a criminal act, that's when the state pays for the prosecution side. And, you know, but right now, you know, there's been cases we've had where the attorney general has come down and sat on the opposite side. We're going after these people who are criminals. They're frauds. They're abusing the system. They're acting under the color of law. Actually, they're filling their pockets with money, too. And the question is asked to the attorney general, you should be sitting on this table with us to go after these people. You know?
Right.
And they
Absolutely.
Scratch their head on that. They're there to protect their own rear ends and their rear ends. They protect each other. You know,
yep.
it's...
Yeah, I mean,
until the people take control, we will not have consent.
Right. Well, I know, but I mean, to me, I mean, I'm going to write a letter to both boards, and you know, tell them that. Listen, I'm really glad to know that it's okay that this is not an illegal action. You know, that we the people, we as public adjusters, we as lawyers, can send letters into areas where they're not licensed, for example, and you don't consider it to be, you know, illegal practice of law. Because, I mean, I just want to throw it back at them and see how they respond.
Right. Well, again, it's not going to go anywhere, in my opinion, without spending a lot of time, money, and energy, or until we get this court situation fixed. And that
Correct.
Means the people take control and deal with the problems the way it was meant to be.
Right. Absolutely. No, I agree with you 100%. It's not. I'm not. I don't expect to really have accomplish a whole lot other than, you know, just to be able to say, you know, you're assholes and you know, I'm
proving Well, they make
it right
these
now.
Summary judgments, these judges, and they think in a lot of these cases they think they have the power and the authority to do so when they don't. But they're so used to dealing with so many jurisdictions where they are coming in from an equity perspective. You know, they're going to make a decision, and you have an appellate process. You can go and appeal it and go through the process, and that's on the lower courts and higher courts. But when it comes to we the people, I mean, you know, they don't belong in here making any kind of a decision in a court. That's up for the jury to do. They can't make a summary decision. They do that all the time using Rule 12, and they don't even explain themselves.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No,
all right. Well, let me 100%. Move on to the
anyway,
next person.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You
want to
get back
gentlemen.
In? There's not that many people in the queue, so.
Okay. Okay.
Anybody
good.
Wants to get into the queue? *6. Okay. Thanks.
Thank
Jeff.
You. Thank
get
you.
Get in
yep,
touch
bye-bye.
With Jan, and Jan, get in touch with Jeff. Maybe he'll participate
yeah.
in this table.
Yes. Yes. Please. Please, Jan. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. All right. We'll take our next caller. And again, anybody wants to get into the queue, *6. I think it says it's do *1 after that or something, but *6 to get into the queue. Our next caller is that Andre? A-N-D-R-E. 229 number. Is that Andre? Andre? What, how do you pronounce that name there, Jan, do you know, or Terry? or Gerard? Are you keyed in now?
Andre,
you got the mic. Go right ahead. Gerard, you want to take controls in a short?
He's unmuted.
Okay,
no response.
Well, last call for Andre, A-N-D-R-E, 229 area code number, 9855. Going once, Andre, 9855. Twice, 9855. Three times. Okay, we'll have to get back. You have to get back into the queue, I guess. We'll go to the next caller. Okay, Valerie from Maryland, you got the mic. Valerie?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Good, it's Valerie, and I'm from Maryland, and I was just wondering, I know that there's a new election coming up for the sheriffs, and I want to get a handbook to my sheriff, whoever it is, and what do you think I should do? Go down to
anybody who would like to do that, you can download a PDF copy of the handbook. And again, we will be updating that soon, but just it'll be a while before we get to that. You can download a PDF copy, which means it'll be 8.5 by 11 sheets, and you know you can staple them together or put in a booklet form or something like that. And that you can get that to the sheriff. But the ideal thing, of course, is to actually get the handbook actually made, which will fit into a shirt pocket. But it's going to cost us. We need $55,000 to do that project nationwide. Every sheriff getting 20 books. We'll have extras, so some sheriffs will call for more. We'll send them out to them, and maybe even sell some of these books to help for the people. We may combine this book and go back to the not only sheriffs but sheriffs and jurists handbook. Because really, the same information, I think, works for both. Although there is some information directly to the sheriff. And we do have information directly to, the jurist. But each should know the other anyway. So, I do have some handbooks left. I got a few boxes. I didn't think I had that many. I know someone sent me an email. I got to give them a call back. They wanted to know if they had any handbooks left. We have boxes of hundreds. I don't have that many. I think I have maybe a half a dozen boxes out there. So there's 100 handbooks in each box. You know, we were selling them for, I think it was $68 for the box when we were selling them. But we need the donation. So anybody who would like that, get a hold of Jan and get their information to Jan. They'll get it to me, we'll probably do it for a $100 donation. We'll send a box out. We can't really send out individual ones only because I'd be spending my day if people started calling and wanting that out. And it's just too involved. We can't do that. But at some point in time, we'd like to be able to sell the handbooks, maybe a buck a piece and maybe when we get the other books, so much for a box or something. I don't know.
So the best.
But anybody who wants, we still have some. Go ahead.
Buy a box.
Yeah, there's 100 in the box. So for a $100 donation, we'd mail you a box.
Okay. And to get a Jan.
I'll give the information right now what you could do. There's a couple of ways to do it. I mean, you can go to get it to Jan, but what you could do is just write a little letter, just a request for a box of 100 handbooks. And if you go up to the website onto our donation page, click on a donation, you come down and see our address. It's National Liberty Alliance. At 3979 Albany Post Road, Suite 107, Hyde Park, New York, and 12538. So that's right up there on the page. So just go to the donation page, you'll see our address. So you can send a check or a money order or something for $100 to that address and request 100 handbooks. That may not be a good idea because, like I said, I only got about a half a dozen boxes maybe. And if I get 12 people asking, you know, then I have to send six of them their money back. So request it through mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Give us your phone number, name and phone number, and then we'll call you, get the information, and then you can mail us the donation, or you can go out to the donation tab at that point and put it in through the donation page or something. But we'll figure that out. So just send your name and phone number requesting a box of 100, excuse me, a box of 100 handbooks. They're jurist handbooks. I think it says jurist, sheriffs, and bailiffs, I think it says, handbooks. And then I'll call you.
Okay.
Okay. I get a copy. When anything that goes to mail at National Liberty Alliance, I get a copy of. Gerard gets a copy of it. Jan gets a copy of it. And maybe there's a few other people. I think Carl gets a copy. So there's like five or six people that gets that mail, a copy of that mail. So usually
now when I get emails from Jan, can I reply to him and can he get my reply?
Yeah. And Jan's email address would be jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. If you hit the reply button, matter of fact, I think Jan's address will come up depending on what he put when he sent it out in the mass email. Usually it has our names there, but we can change that to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. But, yeah, Jan should get a copy of whatever you click a return to on that.
Okay, because I really want to get this out to my whoever is elected sheriff, because there's a new, obviously a new, whatever you call it, run for a new sheriff.
Oh, yeah, an election coming up, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, some
so
counties, some states do 2 years, some states do 4 years. I think I've heard of some states that do 6 years for the sheriffs, but I think four is the most popular, you know, term for sheriffs, 4 years.
Yeah, and also, I just want to say that no matter what people hear on the internet or the mainstream media, they must do their research and find what Trump is actually doing, because too many times do they make assumptions without checking what he has actually done, because
right.
Too many people in the past have said what they will do, and it all sounds great, and it all sounds nice, but they
don't do what they're going to do. Trump is on YouTube just about every single day. I mean, goodness, there's so much. He's doing so much. He's got lots of rallies going on, especially coming up towards the elections. He's been touring. He hasn't stopped touring the country since he's been elected.
I know, and there's never been so much transparency ever.
Yeah.
But yet,
yeah, I know.
But yet, people aren't really understanding.
Because the masses follow CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, or whatever.
They're used to being said, okay, this is great, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and they don't. They do
well,
the
you
opposite.
Know, you know how you can turn somebody, okay? At least I think you might be able to be helpful to turn somebody.
Well, just
is
look on.
Someone who is anti-Trump and they're anti-Trump because they're listening to the news. I mean, I'm not talking about someone who's really radical involved and, you know, not talking about that. But the general person said, look, everything I hear about this guy is nothing but bad. He's doing this. He's doing this, the opposite. Well, here's the thing. And I realized this recently, and I don't know why it didn't come to – I mean, it's kind of been to my attention, but not as much as I realized. For instance, I listen to a particular radio station. I get the news, and it's got the garbage news on it. You know, probably comes from ABC or something. I don't know. But anyway, and other places, sometimes I'll tune in here or there just to see what they're saying. Every single message that all of these news medias, quote unquote, put out, every single message is negative. Everything is negative. And there is not, they can't find one positive thing to say. I mean, there's got to be something good to say about somebody. But they don't find it. If you bring that to that person's attention and just say, look, just become aware of the fact whenever you hear anything about Trump, listen very carefully, see if they ever say anything positive or anything good or anything. And they'll discover, you know, it's all negative. You know, everybody is a rapist or a sex offender, it seems. You know, look what they're doing to Kavanaugh. And look what they've done to Trump, and look what they've done to Kennedy and so many other good people. You know, they just destroy them by just getting all this negative stuff out there. And it's time this needs to stop. People need to go to jail for this. And I think it's going to happen this time. So.
Oh, yeah, speaking of jail, I know about the indictments with, you know, Hillary and, oh, God, what the heck is his name from Nevada? Oh, Harry Reid. Has anything come of that?
Well, the indictments we did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, no, it's been filed in the courts. It's up in, we have a place where we opened up in the Northern District here for a depository, and we filed it, and we've sent it out to the appropriate authorities, and nobody has acted upon it yet. We weren't really expecting anyone to act upon it yet, and we're going to be doing some more indictments, I'm sure, once we get this next case going, and we'll deposit them, and we'll also file them in the court case we're using, and we'll send copies up to the Attorney General for U.S. attorneys for the purpose of prosecuting. That's what we did last time. All of these papers, we sent it to the U.S. attorney. Well, actually, we sent it up to the Jeff Sessions, okay, the Attorney General, for U.S. attorneys to prosecute these cases. Now, we have not heard anything back. There was a couple of things that came from the Justice Department. It wasn't from Jeff Sessions, but some underlink, it appears anyway. But we were not expecting to get anything really done yet because it's too premature. I think once the mass arrests happen, well, all these people are indicted from other places anyway. So they're going to, you know, have to pay justice.
Hear Trump say today in one of his, I don't know what you call it, speeches,
rallies, or
to the public. Not in a rally, but
a press conference.
Yeah. He did mention, oh my God, what was it again? Shit. It was something that I was wondering about, and he mentioned it. Oh my gosh. It came in and it just flew out of my head. It was important.
That comes with age.
Yeah.
That's the same problem.
It's a lot lately. Oh my gosh, it happens too much.
We can blame it on the water or the air too, so, but yeah.
It was, oh my gosh. Oh, and it was important too. Oh my gosh.
All right, well, if you think about it, you can get back in the queue. There's only one other person in the queue right now other than you. Anybody who wants to get into the queue, has a question or comment, anything, *6 to get into the queue. All right, you can get back into the queue if you want, Valerie, when you remember it.
All right, I will.
*6.
Okay.
Okay, we'll take our next call, and that is the last person in the queue, so it's still a little early. It's only 11:15, so anybody who wants to get in there, let's get in there now. See, someone else just dropped in. So, okay, so let's take our next caller. This is a 607 area code number, no name. You got the mic. You've been unmuted.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, we can hear you.
This is Sarah Yarbrough. I spoke to you a while back.
Oh, how you doing, Sarah? Yep, I remember.
Hi, you remember me?
Yes, I do.
I have a question for you. I went today to the I moved up here to Broome County. It's up in, you know, I don't know if you know what Broome County is.
I know Broome County. Yep, I do.
Yeah. Okay, so
been up there numerous times.
I don't know what's wrong with these people up here. This is crazy. I think it was, for some reason, it was easier in Brooklyn, even though it's crazier in Brooklyn. But these counties, these rural counties are just very weird. So I went today to record.
Yeah, well, life is very, very different from the five boroughs down there. When you get out up north there, whole different world, you know. But it's
a
slower pace, much slower pace. And
but the people, even when I go into the county building, there's a, you know, they're trying, they have those metal detectors, you know, and everything. I'm like, it's
yep.
a county. It's just a little county. I mean, what is it? What's the big problem? And, you know, and then they're like, they're guarding the president.
Yeah,
well, in any
I know.
Case, it just really gets, because I'm like, and the police people are like, they look at you like you're a criminal. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. It's just weird. So what happened is that I went to the clerk, and I'm trying to record. I'm trying to do a secure party, you know. Something like that. And they didn't want to record my paper. What do I do in that case?
Well, you know, they can't reject it. You could ask to speak to the...
It's a copyright notice, and you know, and there isn't...
Yeah,
the
well, you can ask to speak to the supervisor. I mean, the highest person there is
the clerk
themselves. I mean, usually you're not talking to the clerk, but...
I did actually. And what happened, I'm going to tell you what they did, because it has to do with probably when you used to fax stuff to them. So the reason she said, well, where are the laws? You know, it said on the title, it said common law copyright notice. And she's like looking for laws inside the paper, you know, like reference citations.
Yeah, statutes, yeah, codes.
Yeah, and then she's like, she said, I cannot record this. And I said, why not? Because it says common law. And then she gave me a paper, you know, they have to, you know, and then she make two copies of it. And she gave me a paper, you know, with the reject, some kind of cover paper, and saying it says is rejected because it says common law. I said, but I just want to record this. I mean, what does she have to do with something being in the you know, citation or
record.
Anything?
Yep.
My question is, what is the law that I have the right, what is the law, if I can use anything, that I have a right to even record anything that I want?
I don't know what the statute might be. There must be a New York statute concerning that, and that might be helpful, but it also might be destructive, too. You know, let's take, you know, these people can't do anything without a statute. And then they
exactly.
seem to think that we can't do anything without a statute. And I always try to inform them, wait a second, you need the statute, not me.
Yes, that's
okay,
what statute I said.
Doesn't
you
control
tell me,
you.
Let me know what law you're using to reject my paper.
Right. So what you should be able to find is a New York statute, okay, that talks about the process and the requirements of them taking it. For instance.
So she told me that I needed to the CPLR. I was like, I need a CPLR, you know, to you know, for you to
well,
allow
you. You can find here's one for instance. Okay, anything that's prima facie for a clerk, they must file. Okay, they don't have the ability to reject. They're not lawyers.
Well,
I mean,
authority, right?
You
there,
know, are you giving
are
me? That's the question you need
right
to
there?
Ask them. Are you giving me legal advice here? I thought you weren't
exactly.
allowed to do that. You know, but there must be stuff on the statutes here in New York, the CPLR, as you mentioned. But you can probably find something on the federal level. You know what? If you go and search on the federal level, there. Let me think.
Yeah, but
this
would
be under 42 and 18 U.S. codes 42, Title 42 U.S. code Title 18. I know those are two particular. 42 and 18. If you Google United States code titles, you'll get a list of all the titles. And come down, look at 42, and do a search, a word search for clerk. Also, you can do the same thing in 18. I know in 18 and 42 they have things on the clerks, and you can use those as a requirement inside your paperwork where they are obligated to file. Okay, and there must be some CPLR, some statutes that help to guide the clerk in their required job, and then find out what it is that's in that requirement, in that code, statute, policy, procedure, whatever you want to call it. Okay, find out what that is, and then put that inside, and make sure it fulfills that part of the process. I mean, I haven't looked into that, but I know I had a problem when I was lost in the man on the land stuff, and I thought, oh, I better go do a a statement of the fact that I'm sovereign or something, and I tried to file it in a
I was looking for it, and then somebody say I'm mandamus, you know, like if they don't want to, because, you know, they just think that they're, and the women, the clerk was a little more respect, because I requested to ask for the clerk, so he came out, and the woman made two copies of my paper, and I said, no, I need the copies, you don't have the right to keep my papers if you're not going to file them, because he says he needed a copy. To, you know, I don't know why they would file the rejections. And so he came out, and then he said, well, we don't work under common law.
Like, well, what exactly are you trying? You're trying to file a statement on something?
It was
what exactly?
Notice. I'm trying to do a secure party paperwork, secure party creditor. So I am supposed to request to file a copyright notice for the name, you know, for the fiction. It's like a copyright. Mm-hmm. And so that's all they said. It didn't say it just common law. It only had like my agreement between me and my fiction, basically. That's all. So there's no. She was looking for, you know, citations. I don't know. She doesn't know it. She's just a clerk.
Yeah.
You know?
Again, you know, you can find these. You can find some helpful things in the U.S. codes under 1842. Use the word clerk, and you'll have a few things that might help you. That makes it a requirement for them to file. They cannot remove, destroy, mutilate, or reject. Now, they could do something that's not prima facie, but when you're getting into the legal things, you know, I filed a court case in the federal court down in against the IRS and a few other individuals. And when I went down into the Southern District and I made the filing, now, inside there, I did use some U.S. codes, but on the cover sheet and the basic information, I used the constitutional violations, and I wrote down what the violation was. And now the clerk came out, and I think it was the chief clerk, as a matter of fact, but the clerk came out. This was in the filing for the court, down in the clerk. But the clerk came out and said, look, you know, you're filing here. We really kind of need a statute. You need to put a statute. Once you put in there U.S. 42, and he gave me the number, and I had already used that. I said, it's already in there. And I said, well, okay, I'll write it down. So I wrote it down. Okay, and on the cover sheet, because that's what he wanted in order to file it. I shouldn't have done that, because what that did is I just changed the jurisdiction of my paperwork into another jurisdiction is what I did. You see? Because I have on my cover sheets, this is a court of record, okay, to proceed as according to the common law, and I define the common law. You know, I put all footnotes and all this stuff. But I didn't realize it then, but, you know, you live and you learn. We learn something new every day, and, you know, I learned a lot of stuff just in the past couple of weeks, particularly last week. I've been doing a lot of writing and stuff and reading and studying and note-taking and filing notes and so on and so forth, and I found a lot of stuff. You know, my research on United States codes, I mean, really, wow, I got a whole different vantage point view of it. I also have a different understanding of Article 3 of the Constitution, where it talks about the jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court, Article 3. Article 3, I think it's Section 2, but it could be Section 1, where it talks about the I think it's Section 1, Clause 2, where it talks about the jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court is in law and equity. It also talks about maritime and a few other things. And but because I was studying law, and I was listening to Kavanaugh speak, and they discussed different bodies of law. And so my kind of thinking, you know, was growing there and starting to look at different things and realizing different things. And I realize now, up until at that point, which is a recent point, as far as what I was concerned, law and statutes were two different things. But now, with my studies on U.S. codes, listening to some conversations, looking closer at the Constitution, the power and the authority of the United States Supreme Court, remember, the United States Supreme Court has no power or no authority to second-guess a court of record. There is no appeal from a court of record.
I didn't know common law is above the Supreme Court. I was reading that yesterday. The other day.
Yeah, it is. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And so what our decision as jurists is as if the United States Supreme Court has put it in stone, okay? As long as your decisions or whatever takes place doesn't violate someone else's unalienable rights where they then could step into there, other than that, they can't. It just blows me away when I hear people are appealing a case from a decision from a jury trial as if there's an appeal process to it. There is no appeal process to a jury trial. It's done. Yes. The record has been set and it's done. Okay. Now, when you read an article, and let me just open up to it. This is Article 3. And this is a very important point. These little things, you know, again, the more and more you study, the more and more something jumps up and you say, let me second guess this one. Let me relook at this because you got maybe some new information or whatever. But in Article 3, it says here in Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made of which shall be made. And it goes on. But the key is this. They have the judicial power not only under equity, but also under law, okay, anything arising. And then, of course, it refers to the laws made by this Constitution. Well, that's what's called positive law, okay? Positive law is human-made law. And some human-made law is a requirement that's necessary in order to make things work. And that's why we gave the power to the legislators to write law under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. We see the 18 powers here, and they can make law concerning certain things. They make law to regulate Congress with foreign – I mean, to regulate Congress. They should regulate Congress. To regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states, okay, and with the Indian tribes and so on. To establish a uniform rule of naturalization, okay? So they have to make laws for that. Now, that is law. It's not just statutes. Those are law. Anytime when you have what's called, and again, this is all brand new stuff to me that I'm talking about right now. I only know the last few weeks I've learned about this. But when you go into the codes, okay, to discover that there are 54 titles in there, and only 27 of them have been enacted. Why only 27 enacted? What's up with the rest of them? You know, so you got to start puzzling this out and figuring this out. What's going on here? Well, I understand, and it is proper. It is proper because those other 27, the 54 minus 27, okay, which would be what is that? 714. So it'd be 37, I guess, right? 3, 4, 3. Well, whatever that works, I think it's 27, 40, 54. Yeah, there it is, 54. So 27 have been enacted, 27 has not been enacted. Okay, well, what's up with the ones that weren't enacted? They still speak about it as being statutes and codes, but, you know, now I see, well, you see, the thing is, it's administrative. There's no real power to do anything that would be, you know, you can't fine people, you can't incarcerate them, you know, and it's something for a particular group of people that all agreed to, you know, whether it's some commercial activity you're involved with or maybe you're working for the government and so you fall under this particular blanket, under this particular codes and statutes. Okay, that's one thing. Well, the other 27, okay, those have been enacted, and those other 27 is also called positive law, which means it is law, it's human law, and therein is where the power and the authority in the United States Supreme Court has the ability to act as an appellate court, as an appeals court in that system. Why? Because the courts below them were not courts of record per se, but they were courts that had the power and the authority and jurisdiction to make decisions and apply those statutes, whatever they may be, okay, in that particular jurisdiction within that courthouse at that time for that purpose, okay? So there they are working on that, and they have the ability as a judge to make a judgment. You don't like the judgment? Well, you'll appeal it up to the next level, and there's a couple of appellate processes you go through, and you can appeal it. Well, therein is the final word is the United States Supreme Court. But that's separated from courts of justice because the United States Supreme Court has nothing to say as far as courts of justice are concerned. And therein is the difference. It's very important to realize that, because now
wow.
I got a better understanding of statutes and law. Well, with some statutes are law, and it's good law. You know, when I was learning the man on the land stuff, boy, I didn't learn that kind of stuff. They didn't talk about that kind of stuff. So therefore, they had a lot of error in their conclusions. And it's much better to deal with this stuff as what it is, call it a fraud. Don't try to click your heels and say the magic words and think you're going to be transported out of that court and saved, because it's not going to happen. You know, the judges laugh at us when we go into the court and do all that silly stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I remember one time I went into a federal court, and I refused to go past the bar. He said, come on up here. You know, I'll stay back here. And I talked from back there. And when I said I couldn't hear you, they said, well, why don't you come up here? So he was trying to entice me in. But really, it didn't mean nothing. It doesn't mean nothing. It's a fraud to begin with. It's irrelevant. So I boldly go up beyond the bar.
Room. You already gave him jurisdiction, basically. Is that what it is? I don't know.
Just by walking up there and giving him jurisdiction in a fraudulent manner, because it has to be a fraud to trap me like that. Okay, number one. Number two, the other thing is how come on their papers, you know, there is the requirement, there is a law, okay, and it's a statute, and I'm trying to think, it's a statute. The United States Supreme Court has brought this up, that all courts must put up on the top of the court case what the jurisdiction is, okay? Now, when you go file a paper in the court, you'll find it's either civil or criminal. Of course, you don't file a criminal thing. You have to go to a prosecutor to get a criminal thing, and therein is another problem, the fox and the hen house. But the thing is so you file a civil case. Well, you know, civil can mean a couple of things here, but generally speaking, the hardcore meaning of civil has to do ultimately with statutory processes, which brings you right into improper jurisdiction, you know. So I try to kind of.
Is that when you use the flag, John? Is that when you use the flag? Because that's they're talking about the admiralty and then we're all vessels. Is that when you use the flag?
I don't care about any of those things. It's irrelevant.
It doesn't mean anything.
Look, it means something. First of all, a lot of this stuff may mean something to then. There may be no problem with a fringed flag in a courthouse, now that I realize it, because they do hear maritime court cases, things that took effect out at sea or on the waterways, and they're being heard in that building at that time. So, you know, maybe the proper thing is to have a fringe flag on one side and an unfringed flag on the other side, one land, one sea. I don't know, but I don't care anything about that. That's irrelevant to me, because, you see, all that is for them. Okay, that's for them to feel better, to feel protected, to think they got some insulation from all the evil that they're projecting from their little robes and chairs and all that stuff up there. You know, they do all this game. They feel safe. But you know what? Little statement here, a little statement there, a little footnote here, and it exposes them. You know, it's a fraud. I'm defining what I'm saying, and now they have a problem trying to close the loops. So, you know, on paper, they don't want to be guilty of anything, be at risk, so they have to try to turn jurisdictions quickly, you know. I've been shut up by judges. This one case I went in, it was an IRS case, and every time I started talking, I'd only get a few words out, and the judge would move from me to someone else. He didn't want me to talk in there, you know? And I said, that's okay, you know? And I told him, look, you can't give me
Contempt? No.
No, I was looking for a conclusion to the case, of course. He couldn't conclude the case, and I told him that you can't conclude the case, you know. And but I'm trying to think of the word. It's something getting any justice out of the case. But anyway, he shut me down so many times. So I responded with a paper, and that court did shut down within weeks after that. But again, because of, you know, and again, there's a couple of reasons that may have been. I'm not sure which one. It may have been more, two or three reasons. But the thing is this, that all that stuff is written for them. not us. It's written for them to feel that they can do their evil and they can say, well, look, I'm just following the law. These are the statutes I got to follow. But if you expose it for what it is, it's null and void and make it clear. Now they're in jeopardy. Now they're at risk, you see. But again, it's a chess game on the one hand. It's a shame that we have to play this. And you have to be careful not to do too pushy. I mean, I got real pushy in one where I was talking about the IRS is a private corporation. It's not this is not a federal agency and blah, blah, blah. And the judge didn't want to hear any of that. Okay, didn't want to hear it. So that's enough of that.
Yeah.
Okay. And I said, oh, okay, you know. But that's okay. I got it on my paperwork anyway. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know? It's all on the paper. The most important thing is the paper,
everything
and you got
to
be careful.
Exactly. Once you put it on paper, you don't have to open your mouth too much because everything is
that's
like
the
this.
Point. The more you open the mouth, the more you open the mouth, the more you may stick your foot in. Because if you go in and you file good papers, and then you go into court and you run your trap a little too much, you maybe say a few things you shouldn't have said, and next thing you know, you just change things, jurisdictions, meanings, and the latest is what's going to be held. So you do have to be careful. I mean, Thornton teaches that one thing, say very little. Just say, I object. Why do you object? I don't know. I'll write it on paper later. I just feel I should object. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Look, because I always go home and write papers after that. You know, and that riles them. They don't like that.
They don't.
You know?
All right, John, I don't want to take too much of people paper, but to round it up, so I should find, if I go to the CPLR, because she wanted the New York CPLR, what should I look for in those titles?
You know,
the
with the New York law, it's very difficult. You can get a listing of the titles of the New York, different titles, the CPLR titles, and then you can run down them and maybe get some keywords and what's in that title and then maybe open it up and run some, a word to find on clerk particularly. See what you can find. But remember, you can use federal code in state court.
Okay, I could do that then. So the USC
42 absolutely.
Or the USC
federal law, is the law, okay, of the land.
Okay.
Right? And
so
remember, it has to do with the Constitution and the process of the United States. So, but 42 and 18, I'm sure you'll find some good stuff.
So I don't know how to, my point is I don't want to take too much of your time there, but I don't know how to include that because it's a copyright notice. Should I just put my the right for me for them to ask for this?
I don't understand enough about what you're doing. I mean, I know you're filing something with the clerk on the record, and you should be able to file anything you
want
on the record. Why they would want a statute of some time, I have no idea why they'd want that.
Yeah, maybe I'm gonna do a cover paper, like you said. That's what, because you know.
Why don't you go to another county and talk to the clerk and see how they operate and so on?
Yes, I'll call that.
Just find out. Say, hey, if I filed this in this county, would you file this? You know, and see what they. I know someone when I was filing papers, and again, I was, it's just stupid stuff I was doing, you know. Again, you know, in the beginning, you're very ignorant and you trust people and you listen to what people are teaching, you believe them, and before you know, you're getting yourself in trouble, really. But, I was filing a paper, a declaration concerning myself here in the county, and a friend of mine was doing it at the same time. There was a number of us doing it because we were learning together. A lot of junk, really, is what it is. But anyway, we were filing it. One of them, I think it was the Orange County, someone living in Orange County, one of the guys, and they wouldn't file it. So he came over and filed it in Dutchess County. Well, maybe that worked for him. He was satisfied with that. I guess so. Why not? The declaration is on record somewhere, you know. But again, there's no need to do that because it's better to fight the fraud for what it is. Expose it on paper. And you could do it in such ways without even, you know, the other side won't even realize you're exposing it. But the judge, a federal judge anyway, being very careful and looking at things, they'll see what you're doing. They'll see what you're saying, and they'll be a little concerned. And, you know, they'll constantly be working to try to twist that case so that they have a place to hang their hat. And if you take away those pins, you have a good chance of getting some accomplishment in that court, you know. But it's like a chess game. It really stinks.
It does.
Let me move on to the next person. Appreciate
you
calling.
Thank you so much, John. God bless you.
You too. Thank you. Okay, next caller, New Jersey.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Good. Yeah, I just wanted to touch base on something in New Jersey. The governor recently formed what they call a conviction integrity unit, which is interesting because it's being headed by a corrupt judge. And he also...
I don't know if it's your kind, do you?
What's that?
I don't know of any other kind of judge.
Right, right. And then he also's got another commission that is supposed to vet judicial nominees, you know? And
conviction integrity, is this on the judge or the people? What is that?
Well, it's a state thing, like an innocence commission, you know, that they have in some states. Because, you know, some states are so corrupt that... for example, in the county that I live in, two guys were convicted of a murder that they did not commit. And they ended up doing like 16 years in prison before they were released based on DNA evidence. So now they have this conviction integrity unit, which is going to be interesting because I'm actually going to be filing some papers with them. And what's so bizarre about my case, and probably it's not unlike other cases, because you talk about the fact that, you know, a judge doesn't have the, you know, the authority to fine or incarcerate. Well, what about a, you know, for example, in my case, I was indicted by a grand jury, yet the alleged victim never even appeared before the grand jury. And on top of that, according to the grand jury manual, the prosecutor was supposed to call me if I wanted to testify. None of that was done, yet somehow...
Yeah, well, a couple of things. Remember, they don't have to bring any kind of evidence that changes what they're trying to do before a grand jury. That was, if you read United States versus Williams, it's called exculpatory. I'm not sure how to pronounce that.
Exculpatory
evidence, yeah. They don't have to bring that before the jury. Now, there are some people who make arguments about that, but they really don't understand the Constitution enough, or at least it's not so much the Constitution as it is the position. And I need to go back and reread this section of United States versus Williams because he makes a case on why. And maybe next week, if you come back with this question, or if I think about it, I'll talk about it because I should know it. But the thing is that they don't have to bring all this evidence before them. But look, here's the bottom line: if the grand jury is really understood their job? Remember, they only know what they're told. They have no
That's
clue
right.
on what their job really is. So whatever the prosecutor says, he's God to them. So he's going to get whatever he's going to get out of them, whatever he wants. And that's a horror. That's why administrators need there to prevent this perversion of justice, to prevent them from abusing we the people. We have to give these people enough knowledge, okay? And that's why we have to have a jurist handbook, okay? But we have to have an orientation process set up. You know, look, they orientate the juries anyway. They spend 6 to 8 hours with them before they, you know, just to orientate them, to bring them to their thinking, the right proper focus of thinking, which, of course, what they do is the wrong thinking. And all these juries are stacked, whether they're grand juries or petit juries, they're stacked anyway. And because they want their conviction. There's money in the conviction. There's money for the judge. There's money for the jails. There's money for everybody for the conviction. So they want the conviction. But the thing is that in true justice, okay, if I was on the grand jury and being educated and understanding, again, we have to deliver this thing, you know, what is your real job, grand jury? Maybe you can prevent this from going to court by solving the problem. First of all, you can't indict anyone unless there's an injured party. So find that injured party. And then when you look at the injured party, you might say to yourself, well, look, the guy stole the man's ox. You know, there's a biblical principle. You got to give him back three. So you you talk to the person whose ox was stolen, you know, and say, hey, look, if I can get to work this out, and he admits that he had done wrong, that he took your ox, and I'll have him give you three back, you know, would that work for you? And they say, oh, yeah, that worked for me. That's good. You know, I feel restored then. And you go to the person who did the injury and say, hey, look, you know, if we can settle this, we don't have to go to court. You stole the guy's ox. If you really didn't, then you should go to court and we'll have a trial. But if you did, you need to think about it. You give him three, you're good. And everybody's happy. We'll make the contract. It's over. It's a sealed deal. Done. Okay? You see, the point is the grand jury should have the option, considering the case, that maybe they can deal with the problem and end it, you know? When you get a complaint, when someone wants to complain to the grand jury and you have an administration there that is by the people and for the people and wants to make that connection between that individual and the grand jury, and you say, well, okay, look, you got a problem here, you want to go talk to the grand jury, but what if I make a few phone calls and I can fix this problem? Maybe we can let these people see the error of their way and maybe they'll be willing to repent and you can go in and get done whatever it is you need to be done. Okay, or restored or whatever it is. So the administrators can do that. And you just think about how much time you save, number one. You're doing the work of justice. You're restoring the individual that was injured, okay? The process could take place at the administrative level. It could take place at the grand jury level. And then if not, it'll take place at the trial level. But at some point, justice will be taken care of and dealt with properly. They're not interested in that. And so you're not going to get that from these people. It's just not going to happen. And that's the problem we face here. Everything's tainted. Everything's twisted. Their justice is not in view. There's not a separation between the jurisdictions of law that is positive law, meaning human law, versus the jurisdictions of law which identifies with what might be criminal, okay, where someone is accusing someone of something. Well, that's a whole different jurisdiction. It's a whole different process. And don't even think about bringing a statute in here. We're going to judge the heart of the man through the hearts of the people. You know, remember, you know, and we're going to make this case pretty darn strong in our case. We're going to do a couple of biblical verses settled the deal right away on this idea, concerning the laws written in the hearts of all men. And the Bible makes a few positions that you can't argue with. You know, even the evil people know right from wrong, and God makes that point. So as much as the good people know. So, again, you know, courts of justice are courts of the heart. And when you remove the heart and you put the stone there, which is the written law, it takes away the heart and there is no justice. Remember, at the end of the day, when all things are said and done, the final consideration of the jury is, okay, you found a person innocent, guilty, you think he's guilty, we have to now consider, is mercy appropriate? How much mercy can we give any? Should we? You see, that's the final, at the end of the day. These courts written in stone do not have that ability, and they don't consider that. After all, there's no way they want to make a person a free person on a grand jury or a trial jury. They don't want to give them freedom. They may get a decision that they don't want. Because after all, there's money in convicting people, putting them in jail. There's money in all these things, you know? And that's what's driving this whole process. It's RICO.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that the juries, grand juries have forgotten that they are not only supposed to be the sword, but they are also supposed to be the shield. And nobody educates them about that.
Right. And that's but if we, the people who are conscious of this, do not get up and do our job, shame on us. Shame on us, and we will be guilty before the Lord. If you know to do right and you don't do that right, well, now you've done wrong, okay? So, you know, too much knowledge sometimes is not necessarily a great thing because there's much more responsibility now and much more action required on your behalf. And so now that we know how to consent to our government, now that we know what is required to understand and have liberty and to be able to give liberty to our children and to our neighbors and, of course, to ourselves and so on and so forth, well, now we got to go get educated because we know about this stuff. And if we don't fix it, who's going to fix it? Do you think the people who are writing in stones, do you think they're going to fix it? They're not going to fix nothing, okay? Because you cannot put the heart on a stone, you know? You just can't do it.
Right.
And every case, I don't care how, they can make the argument in court, well, the case is similar. Well, similar is not the same thing, is it? There must be something changed in there that makes it only similar and not the exact same thing. Is the case exact same thing? Well, it's not exact. Well, then it's just similar. Well, it's similar, yeah. But so it's not the exact same thing. So one size does not fit all. That now puts a whole new twist on the case on what needs to be considered. You see, you cannot run a court of justice with statutes. It cannot be done. And again, it goes back to Bork, okay? You know, all these people, 80% of the people in jail are there because they opened their mouth, okay? In other words, they participated instead of rejected and denied.
Well, that's funny because I never testified to anything. I never made any admissions after I was arrested or anything like that, yet I was still convicted. And the thing that's so bizarre about it is that the grand jury is so ignorant that they didn't even bother to call the alleged victim. I was indicted entirely on hearsay by the cop who arrested me. He had no knowledge of the alleged threat. Yeah.
And he can't be a witness per se. I mean, generally speaking, he can't be, depending on the violation. Let me give you a little story to tell you how bad it is, okay? And this is one of our members who has a situation where her son, okay, drove someone to a certain place, okay, where a murder was committed, okay, and the person that he drove that committed the murder, he then became accessory, even though he wasn't in on the murder, he didn't go into them, knew nothing about the murder. It just later on, he was the guy who drove, okay? I may not have this story exactly right, but generally speaking, the key part of this whole thing is the person that was charged with the murder was found innocent, okay? Yet the person who claimed to drive this innocent person to a murder, who committed the murder, who didn't commit the murder, is found guilty of accessory. Now, that happened because two cases ran differently, and I think his case ran first, and then the innocent of the second one. But look at when the knowledge comes to the judge of what took place in that court, in that case, and now there's a whole new thing. That's got to be overturned because the jury was not given the information that, hey, wait a second, the person who he drove and dropped off didn't commit the crime. So there is no connection here. There is no accessory to the fact, to the murder. But that's how bad it is that they can't even fix that problem. I mean, how is it that you can't, you know, if I was a judge, I'd make sure a habeas corpus was hit that 3 days, that person maximum would be out of jail. Matter of fact, I don't even know that I wait the 3 days. 3 days is the maximum time in response for habeas corpus. And that they codified, they put a statute on that to make sure it happens. It's a federal statute. Okay, 3 days is it. And so when you do a habeas corpus, if they don't respond in 3 days and nobody does nothing in 3 days, you know what, the sheriff should have the knowledge to know that the habeas corpus went forward. He should have delivered the body to the court. He should have seen nothing took place, and he is now has a duty to let that person go. As much as the judge that should have been there and say, hey, nobody's responding. Get out of here. You're free. It shouldn't be any more difficult than that. It's just common sense. It's the law of the heart. Okay?
Of course it
is. It's what's right. It's what's just.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, before I went to trial, I was going to hire this guy, okay, and he was in private practice. And when I met with him, he called the indictment bullshit. And he went on to become the assistant chief prosecutor of Passaic County. So, you know, that's what I was indicted on and convicted on, bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And this
well,
is
again,
even one of their own.
80% of the people in jail don't belong there. It's all fraud. They put in there fraudulently. Look at when you go to a court, just think about how many people are convicted in courts that don't have the power to fine or incarcerate. Every village court is a Nisi Prius court. Every town court is a Nisi Prius court. Every city court, with the exception, the only exception I know is New York City, because in our constitution it says New York City courts are courts of record. So they take place, and they're really county courts, but there's numerous ones because it's big. But in any event, any city court is a Nisi Prius court. A Nisi Prius court is one court that you go to. It says first unless. That's what Nisi Prius means, first unless, which means unless you deny, object, then the first part of the assumption takes place. So when you go in before a judge, and the judge asks you, how do you plead? You plead innocent or you plead guilty? I'm not pleading anything. You want to plead no contest, or you they got a few other ones they use. No, you have to object to the whole process, because you see, he's trying to get a plea out of you in order to get jurisdiction over you. And these judges are taught this. Now, I don't know if they're taught the knowledge of what that really means, but they must realize it means something, okay? And I've seen judges pulling their hair out trying to get the person to make a statement to something, you know? And I've seen cases going on for over a year, back and forth, every month, trying to get this person to be susceptible to the court. So that judge must know something, and that makes it really evil if he does know something. But the bottom line, a Nisi Prius court, okay, which is an administrative court, has no power to fine or incarcerate it. It is all built upon unenacted law, a law that has not been enacted ultimately. But even if it has been enacted, okay, even if it has been, it's null and void because it's repugnant, okay? You know, you can't tell me I can't put a needle in my arm to get high. It's none of your business. You know what? And just think about how many lives you can save if they legalize that and put it in its proper perspective and make sure it's not sold to children. And, you know, you get rid of so much crime, it's pathetic. All of the wars and drug wars and killings and things going on to get this stuff here, you know, kids being enticed into drugs out of the schoolyards. And so all that would disappear. The drugs would become very rare. And you could teach in schools, you know, hey, you know, don't take drugs, it'll kill you. It's no good. This is what it does to you. And they don't get the other side and the stress of being, pushed into taking drugs. So, again, any of these laws, they're more destructive than good, you know?
Yeah, I know. That's why they're legalizing marijuana. They're realizing it's more profitable to legalize it than it is to, incarcerate people.
Well, I think they knew that a long time ago. They didn't legalize it because it's got a lot of good medicinal usages to begin with. And also, really, I think they do a lot of things just to keep us busy and upset and angry. You know, you just keep the people really, you know, to keep the slaves in slavery, you know. And,
right.
It's a mess. But we can fix it. And again, you can't have any of these things fixed unless the people get involved, unless the people become educated, okay, and get involved. And you don't need to become an administrator, but you should become educated, and everyone should become educated. All of our children should be educated before they get out of even grammar school, they should know. And personally, I don't think it's necessary to go beyond 8 years of schooling for any kid. You know, you go back 80, 100 years, the education for an eighth grade was so far advanced, far above high school, it was in college level already on the basic necessary knowledges of people should have, and civics and constitution and mathematics and so on. All of this stuff, it could be, but they want to keep us dumb. They want to keep us in school for as long as possible. And this way they get more and more control and brainwashing and so on and so forth, you know. This goes on and on. But the people can fix this if they want. It requires education. That's where it begins. So.
Yeah, I appreciate your feedback. I think that we need to get these grand jurors, if they only were able to take, you know, the NLA course, we'd be a lot better off.
Oh, yeah. And we've got a better course coming up. It should have been out months ago. But there's just been so many things, so much work, and we need help. We really need help, people. So really, if you can volunteer some time, please get a hold of Jan to help us with anything. But anyway, you know, we have a good course, and also we're writing a book. And when that book comes out, I think that's going to be the key. I really want to try to cover everything that we, the people, need to know. And hopefully we won't miss anything. And if we do, when we go through the renewal, what do they call it? I guess every so many years, as long as it's in print, you can edit it and bring it up, you know, add things into it. But we're really looking to get a book out there that covers everything that people really need to know, all the basics, you know. and even the processes. Everybody should know the processes. I mean, I used to pull my hair out of my head years ago trying to go into the courts without having to deal with a lawyer and try to, you know, represent myself. And there was no place to learn anything. Nobody could point the finger here or there. You know, I just did an appeal on a case, and I've never done an appeal before on a federal level. I've done an appeal on a state level, which was very simple. I mean, I went up, we filled out some papers, went up. They were very helpful. They even helped us correcting some things on the paperwork, spent time with us. I mean, I was just amazed on the appellate court in New York. It really was very well. And I also was very amazed on the involvement into the case by these judges until they came to our case, okay? Our case, they had no clue on what our case was about. And I knew, I was listening to these judges, you know, I think there was four of them up there, and they'd come up and they'd talk, the people in the cases, both sides would come up and talk, and the judges would quiz them and ask questions and this and that, trying to get to understand the case, and you could see they read the case. When it came to ours, I mean, you know, when they said something to us and they wanted to know what party we're in, because it had to do with the committee men, and I was just blown away, you know, why is he asking that question? And we were just silent for a moment and perplexed, and we reflected that perplexity that, why are you asking us? That's nothing to do with a party. You can see the embarrassment in the judge. They did not read our case. They had already made the decision which way they were going. Why? Because this was a political thing. And they presumed, and they didn't, and you know what happens when people presume. They never, none of them read the case. But generally speaking, the appeal system is good in New York, I think, anyway. But I went to the federal appeal, okay? And they give you some papers, and you really got to do a lot of reading and a lot of guessing and go through it again and again and again. Once I got the figure of the paperwork out and what had to be done, you know, I had to file one thing with the court where it came up from, and then file the other thing down into the appeals court, and everything had to be done in a certain amount of time, and certain things had to be done, of course. You know, really, you got to serve everyone involved, and you got to fill out certain forms and file them. But it took me a couple of days. I was just confused and perplexed and trying to figure it out. But once I got it figured out, I said to myself, if these people would have just given me some kind of, I guess I'll call it a schematic, you know, where you draw a line, you start here and you come down here and you go here, and then a line goes, maybe makes 3 points coming off, and then this and this has to be done and this has to be fine. Just draw a picture of what needed to be done. It would have been so much easier. I could have done it in one day. But it took me days, 3 or 4 days, going reading the statutes, reading the papers over and over, and trying to figure out what it is that I need to do. But it was simple on the end. But this, they want it to be complex. They want it to be priestly. This way it keeps you and me out of there. They want, you had to be one of the guys in the club, you know, a bar attorney or someone.
I know that's near the end of the call, but I know what you're talking about. I went through the same thing. It was obviously they never read my paper. They saw that pro se, so you know, that's just an excuse to get rid of me.
Right. Well, and that was on the appellate level.
Yeah.
On the trial level.
Well, actually, I did. That's the other funny thing is my lawyer filed the appeals on the state level for my eviction and my conviction, but I filed a petition for post-conviction relief, and this is kind of bizarre because then they had the same judge who violated my rights. You know, I'm about to go back before him and, you know, file a petition. He's the one who's hearing my petition for post-conviction relief. I mean, what the hell? I mean, why waste my time?
Mm-hmm. Well,
so eventually,
you know,
yeah.
You're in Jersey, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how Jersey works and how things go, but look, the whole system rots, rotten from the core, from the bottom up. And it's a very easy thing to fix, very easy. The reason why they're getting away with this and they're doing all these things is because the people aren't in there controlling and watching what's going on. if the people were in there and understood what was going on and understood what the law is and what, you know, what natural law really is, which is common law, and understand the differences between the laws and what a court of justice is and the power of the people, the authority, the ability. First of all, you can't try someone for breaking a statute, okay, and not as the people anyway. You know, if people were in control and watching, like we're trying to do, build the administrations and make sure people understand when they become jurists what they need to understand, okay, we wouldn't have any of these problems. And, you know, the best cleanser is light. And that's exactly what we, the people, need to be. We need to bring the light into the courtroom. We need to expose in our own minds and broadcast it to others what's going on. And but if we had control, there'd be no nonsense. We would truly have, if we get the administrative process up across this nation by the people, non-political, disconnected, and take back the political process through the committee man process, if we do those two things, you would never be able to find a better nation than the United. And we're still pretty good anyway, but we got a lot. We're not following the Constitution, you know? So maybe we should give it to someone who wants to follow it, because we're certainly not using it. We need to exercise that Constitution. And the other thing is as a committee man, you know, if people don't know the Constitution, then we should not support them and get them onto the tickets. And once they realize that, we can send them to a place to learn the Constitution, and they come back and we'll quiz them again. And once they understand what they need to understand for whatever it is, to, you know, concerning the law and their office, whatever they're running for, then we'll have much better statesmen and people being a little more careful. But none of these people know the law. I mean, just think about this. They all need a lawyer to do anything. And yet they raise their hands, every single one of them, and swear to protect and honor and uphold the Constitution. Okay, well, how can you make that sworn statement concerning that if you haven't got a clue on what it says? You know?
That's funny, because I sent a copy of the committeeman flowchart to a former Republican committeeman, and he had no idea, you know?
No, they don't. Yeah, they don't. I've been all over New York State preaching this. I mean, this is where we started with the committeeman process here in New York years ago, and we ended up saying, okay, we got to go to court. And then we found a bigger problem, a bigger can of worms to open, and of course, it led us through where we're at today with the grand jury. But you know, we would go out, the regular people who know nothing and are not in the system. Okay, who are interested in doing things. We go out to speak to people, and they understood clearly what we were talking about, asked a lot of great questions, and so on and so forth. Okay, Terry, thanks. A couple more
minutes.
Okay,
good night.
And but the thing is, I was talking to another Terry.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is that they didn't have they understood exactly what we were talking about. But whenever we would talk to people who are, quote-unquote, they claim to be elected committeemen, okay, one of the things is what we showed is that they're not elected, and maybe that's what bothers them. But they just couldn't get it through their thick skull. They just didn't see it. They couldn't get it because their minds have already been tainted. And so, yeah, you can't get through to them. They have to come to a point where they see so many problems. Let me go revisit to see what these people are talking about because there's something wrong here. But, again, committeemen have a high attrition rate. So people don't last very long. They're constantly turning people over. They never get enough people to fill all the seats to begin with anyway. And that's why they fill the seats almost anywhere in the county when people run for a committeeman, which is not appropriate. You look at your, as a committeeman, you must run within the election district within your town, okay? Now, if you, you know, preferably the election district you live in, but you can run in the election district next door because maybe just one block over, and you're representing the people in your town. It's the same election process. All the people in that town are voting for the same thing, unless an assembly line cuts a problem. But that even that is worked out anyway in the system. But the thing is that in the election district that you live in, you're representing those people, okay? And you have to be elected by those people, okay? You have to be, first of all, you have to get your papers, walk your papers, and then you get all the signatures, and now you get onto the ballot. If no one's running against you, New York State Constitution says you're then deemed elected. If someone's running against you, you got to go onto the ballot, and there's a runoff on the ballot. But how can you go and get, put into a position in another election district where those people did not choose you? They didn't sign papers for you, okay? And they'll send you into another town sometimes because all they're trying to do is fill the seats within that county, okay? And how could that be? How can you represent people? Let's take a caucus. You know, if people come together in a caucus to make a vote, and they elect their committeemen that way, and they do that. There's a couple of counties in New York that does that. I think Massachusetts or a few of those New England states, they do a lot of stuff that way throughout the whole state. But, you know, how can you be elected by someone in another election district to represent an election district that they don't live in? And you know, it doesn't matter where you live, as long as you represent that election district, you can run anywhere in that town. But, you know, if the people of that election district didn't elect you, how can you be deemed elected? You can't be, because you're not representing the people who are voting you in. There's no representation there. And that's the big problem with the committeeman thing. And that's just the beginning of the iceberg. It sounds like you've read our stuff and are familiar with it. On the committeeman that we have here on NLA.
No, he's only familiar with what I've given him so far, but I think he might be interested in running as an independent committeeman.
Yeah, but here's the big problem. And you know, people will go to a conservative party, they'll go to an independent, they'll do this or that, there's some other parties, green or whatever. But you know what? There's only two parties that have any power and authority, and that's the Republican and the Democratic Party. So if you really want to make a change and do something, you need to run in one of those two parties. That's number one.
Right.
The other thing is we have to get rid of the parties. In the beginning, there was I should get the name of the party. It might have been the Federalists. Okay, and Jefferson was upset because they had chosen the name that he should have had. You know, it was an oxymoron for them to be in the other position. But in any event, Jefferson came up with the Democratic Republican Party. Okay, and basically, of course, Democratic Republican Party, we use a democratic process to elect our representatives. But, of course, we don't elect everyone that way. You know, senators shouldn't be elected that way, and presidents aren't elected that way. But in any event, we do use a democratic process to make the election, but our rule of law is Republican. And what they've done, of course, and I think this happened, I think, around Lincoln's time, where they divided the party. They took the Jefferson Party, Democratic Republican, and separated, and both parties claimed Jefferson. Of course, the Democratic side hates him. You know, they say all kinds of evil against him. But in any event, they've divided the people. We need to fuse it back. We did that here in New York, by the way, because when we did our process, we had a convention. We pulled all the elected committeemen in one place in Kingston, New York. We had a convention, and we rewrote the party rules, and we established them. That they're not being exercised in New York, but when we do win back the process through the courts, which we can't do until we win the courts back, in New York State's ready to rock and roll, and we fused the two parties together. When we had our convention, it wasn't a Republican nor a Democratic convention. We had anybody, any party come, and we agreed right up the line. Every point we agreed upon. And so the rules for the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are the same. And they were focused in on giving liberty to the people, freeing the people and preventing, subversion by, you know, powerful individuals with influence and so on and so forth to take the rule, becomes a top-down process. We wrote the rules so it becomes a bottom-up process. And one day we'll put those rules up online and we'll suggest to everyone to consider those rules for their counties across the nation, because maybe they can even make it better. But we'll give them what we've done, work that we put together. But that's what we have to get. Really, there should be only a committee man for each election district, not for each party. Okay? Right now, there's committee men for each election district. Okay, one for Republican and one for Democrat in each election district. And in some cases, there may be other parties, independent parties or whatever, that they've been able to get in and have a party influence somehow on the, you know, the election districts. But they're not powerful enough. You know, that's why you have to join one of the two, you know, the criminals on the right or the criminals on the left, and try to decriminalize them, you know. All right, anyway, we're way, way overboard. Thanks
okay,
a lot, Terry,
thanks.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot, Terry.
All right, bye.
We're going to end the program. We're like 14, 15 minutes over. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next week. And look at everybody needs to get involved, needs to help us get out there, get the word out. Anybody that can make any contact with any groups, maybe YouTube, someone on YouTube, radios, TV, you know, we need to get the word out and start hitting, you know, hitting the pavement here a little bit. All right. See you next week. Thank you. Good night. Let me see if I can maybe put a closing. Well, we'll just shut down. Thank you. Good night.